Blog Talk Radio.
Because here we go with the main event of the evening. Ladies and gentlemen in attendance, Bucks and fans joining us around the world. It's time for the bout you've all been waiting for. Finally, it is showtime.
Here, man, we dedicate our life to this sport. We give, we do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moving, and we want that fight to land on the, to land on the line.
Fans, this is the Rope with Dope Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Tuesday night with a lot to talk about, obviously, right? Obviously. So, you know how it is. We do love to talk about what happened inside the ring. And we will start there, of course, once we get going. You know, Tim Tszyu scored an impressive, solid, unanimous decision over Mendoza. You had Sam Goodman, you know, win the fight cleanly, but the Flores gave a hell of an effort, let's say. So that was a really fun fight to watch. Jana Beck, Keyshawn, pretty clean victories there, right? Not really. You know, I did get some folks after last week's show coming at me saying, why didn't you do a segment of breakdown on the Jana Beck fight? Well, now you see why. I mentioned it. And hey, if it would have been a competitive fight, we'd have a nice long segment on it for recap, but it just wasn't. It's no big deal. Like I said, not every, you know, unification is created equal. You know, it just, that's just not how it works. And it's nothing against Jana Beck. I mean, he took care of business. He definitely took care of business. I'll say, watching the tape, the film, some of the film of that guy in the ring, it seemed worse, to be honest. I actually didn't think it was going to be, well, I thought it was a mismatch, of course, but I didn't think it was going to be that easy. I thought it'd be fairly easy. Not all that difficult for Jana Beck, but either way, he moves on. He's got two belts. That's a commodity for him regardless. So we're going to talk about that. I really was excited about a fight, Joshua Buatsi. I almost put Buatsi. I put that together. Joshua Buatsi and Dan Aziz had a nice, speaking of breakdown segment, that was going to be the one I covered the most. Preview and predict that. Unfortunately, it's a no-go. Hopefully not for good, though. We do have some news as far as the timeline for the postponement. It just sucks because anytime it gets, you know, canceled fight week, man, that sucks, dude. It's Tuesday fight week, man. That sucks, man. That really sucks. Catterall and the Linares, Rocha and Santillan. That could actually be a good fight, though. Rocha might have a good fight on his hands. You know, Linares, what's left of Linares at this point, could he make, you know, rounds interesting? Maybe within the round, not win it a ton. You know, maybe he's got the skill to do something, but it's tough to say, you know, to feel confident he could put, you know, a full performance together. Now, Catterall didn't look all that good in his last fight, so, you know, we'll see. We will see. Now, you know, the elephant in the room, Paramount Plus, is Showtime Boxing, and I guess you could say Showtime sports in general, the whole department, everybody involved in Showtime Boxing and Showtime Sports, you know, got fired. And, you know, you never like to hear the news about people losing their jobs. In this case, you know, sometimes there's people in Congress or, you know, other walks of life that you go, yeah, I'm glad that person lost their job. But in this, not so much, right? Not so much. Now, the writing has been on the wall. A lot of it had to do, you know, not just with coming out of COVID, lower ratings, but also what was going on behind the scenes, which we definitely documented it. The Showtime, first of all, just the premium cable model we know has been, you know, down in the dumps for quite a while. Showtime, their app combining with Paramount, we've seen the, you know, the grouping of, you know, if you're under one umbrella, why not put it together? HBO Max turned into Max, or The Max, is it The Max or Max? Can't remember. With Discovery, like, there's a lot going on behind the scenes, and as we know, streaming is the future, right? It's just a matter of time. We don't know exactly when it's going to take all the way over. And I say that because, you know, if you look at the NFL and the NBA, the combination of they have these long, in college football, by the way, lineal, they still have these long lineal deals. I'm not saying 15 years or nothing, but they're fairly long linear television deals. But they also have app deals. We saw the NFL with Thursday Night and Amazon Prime. So the writing was on the wall, no doubt about it. I mean, you could kind of see budget-wise, you know, back a year or two before HBO was going out of business as far as boxing business. So it's not a shocker or a surprise or anything like that. You know, like I said, does it suck to an extent? Sure, because now you don't know other things. Now, it could be a positive, it could be a negative, it could be whatever, you know, as far as the PBC. You know, how many people that did make Showtime Boxing solid and sometimes excellent, other times, you know, mediocre, whatever, it could suck and stuff like that. Obviously, a lot of their quality, top-level fights, we're going to pay-per-view. That's just a fact. So their schedule, especially this year, their schedule was kind of pretty – I mean, they had the best schedule, but as far as Showtime Boxing, it wasn't like bouncing back and forth to, oh, that's – oh, sweet, that's going to be on normal Showtime, that type of stuff. So not to say there weren't some good quality stuff. It just, you know, it, like I said, the writing's been on the wall for a while. Really, ever since COVID, the combination of COVID, some of the boxing ratings in general, but especially when we're talking about premium cable, you know, it, like I said, I'm not shocked. Now, like I said, where does PBC go? How much, you know, who from Showtime Boxing, whether it's on the broadcast or whether it's behind the scenes or a Steven Espinoza, you know, who goes over to wherever the PBC is going to go? Now, the whole, you know, I have seen over the last couple of years, you know, when we talk about HBO's demise compared to Showtime's demise, we all know that, you know, a lot of this had to do as far as the different sentiment of Showtime going out of business compared to HBO. We know a lot of this had to do with Al anyway, and in fact, it's always been the PBC is dead or the PBC's out of money or they have no budget or they have this. They're done. People have been saying that since late 2015. And, you know, that's just how it goes. So a lot of it was Showtime shouldn't have hitched its wagons to the PBC. That's how Showtime got involved. As soon as Golden Boy went back to HBO and it was just the PBC and Al Heyman for the most part on Showtime, that's when it was like, fuck Showtime, to a lot of people, not everyone, but that, like I said, the sentiment is different. Now, you see a lot of people today showing their ass and showing, you know, talking about fanboys, PBC fanboys, but some of these folks that harp on that shit are the ones that are fanboys of platforms themselves because they're celebrating this, you know. I didn't see anybody really celebrating HBO demise when it happened. But I've never been partial to just one network. This year, Showtime, you know, they're the network of the year. Last year, it was DAZN. DAZN's had a good year this year, but not so much. So if you look at 2021, half of 2022, because as we know, you know, August and on, they, you know, the schedule really lightened up. And then this year, yeah, two out of the last 3 years, I'll give them credit for going out with a bang. But like I said, you know, we knew the writing was on the wall, and so this isn't really all surprising. It was just a matter of where it goes next. And like I said, some of this is just, it started out as the PBC is dead for years now. And like I said, it kind of turned into, well, Showtime's dead now. Okay, cool. You know, I got a bunch of messages today about Eddie Hearn was right. Well, technically, he said they were going to go out of business. That's fair. But he did say within a year. You know what I mean? So, and by the way, he's had his budget cut as well, if you look at how much they're spending compared to what they were in general. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because this one person, when I get a prediction right as far as who's going to win, but I don't get the exact outcome, he makes sure to tell me that. But then he's also saying Eddie was right on the money. Well, then that means all those predictions, I was right on the money then, right? Right? And I don't know the person's name, so otherwise I would at least say it. But he was partially right. Like you say to me about my predictions, partially right. Well, Eddie was partially right because, remember, he said this in 2018. It's now I'm looking at it 5 years later. So he got it partially right. But the premium cable thing we've been talking about for a while, and, you know, the transition from network to premium cable, some on basic cable, of course, we all remember, well, not all of us, but a good, you know, fair amount of us that are listening to the podcast, remember, you know, Tuesday night fights. And ESPN's gone through different levels of boxing, you know, before Top Rank. Or even the PBC got on there for a little bit. You know, it had dwindled down to just Friday night fights on actually ESPN2 mostly. Once in a while they would do an ESPN card. But so, yeah, it's no shocker. The news is, it's definitely not a shocker. But now what's next for the deepest roster in boxing? I think that's what's next. You know, there's rumors swirling about Amazon Prime. There's other, you know, kind of lighter rumors about DAZN. Obviously, you'd assume, well, I shouldn't say obviously, but you'd assume they'd go somewhere streaming, but I guess you can't rule it anything all the way out because we did get a little bit of news of Boxer, who's, you know, has a deal with Sky Sports, you know, having a deal with now NBC Sports in the Peacock, the streaming app. So that's pretty cool. Now, you know, they're going to get their first, you know, they're on their first card, they're already going to get a cancellation, which, you know, that kind of sucks for them to have that, you know, as a cancellation. Now, the fight that they're replacing is the main event, like, it's not a great main event, but it's still an interesting fight, I think. But yeah, Boxer over there in the UK, like I said, it was a deal with Sky Sports. Was it just yesterday or the day before? I think it was yesterday. NBC Sports, Peacock deal, signed, sealed, and delivered. Don't really have any kind of information at this point that I've seen for how many years it is or if it's short-term, mid-term. I have no clue. No clue. But like I said, we're gonna talk about last weekend. We're gonna preview some of the stuff. Like I said, the Joshua Buatsi Dan Assis fight. I was interested to see Buatsi and if he could, you know, how he would handle that pressure, come forward, you know, I'm going to be in your face. You know, I really wanted to see how his how he could control that fight with his jab and some of the other stuff, movement, pushing Aziz back at times, or not necessarily back, but stopping him in his tracks and all that. But unfortunately, that fight, that was the one as far as the main event that I was most looking forward to. We do have Catarell Linares, Alexa Roaches, you know, in there with a solid dude. So we'll see. You know, we'll see. We do have some, I guess you could say, like domestic level fights where, sure, we might know some of the ceilings of these guys already, but they're pretty equally matched fights. So hopefully they turn out, you know, hopefully they turn out good. But like I said, you know, that we're obviously gonna, like I said, I do like, because it's not a complete shocker, and we've been talking about this so much, we are gonna get to that stuff, the Showtime stuff, the PBC stuff, but I do want to start still in the ring. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to start in the ring because, like I said, yeah, it's breaking news and all that, whatever. We get that. But, like, you know, some of this stuff will be going over. And I don't, you know, repetitive is one thing. You end up being repetitive when you're in boxing anyway. Talk about the jab every fight and stuff like that. But so we will. We'll start in the ring, though. Let's start in the ring first. And by the way, if this is your first time listening to the Ropa Dope Radio Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Ropa Dope Radio. You don't have to go to Ropa Dope. And, you know, you don't have to go there if you don't want to. That's cool. The Ropa Dope Radio Podcast available on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, Google Podcasts. Download the podcast app, Podbay, and a host of other platforms. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com, Eastside Boxing, and Phil Boxing. One more thing. DirecTV Stream is here, and now the MLB postseason is here. Sign up and catch every game live on DirecTV Stream. There's no satellite, no cable box required. For limited time, save $30 when you sign up. Choose the DirecTV streaming package that's right for you. No annual contracts, no hidden fees. Remember, for a limited time, save $30 when you order online. The prices start at $64.99. Okay, so going to go to John here in a short little bit. You know, I thought that the fight started out pretty well for Mendoza. You know, he definitely had his jab, landed a couple to the body. I'd say pretty, maybe like 60 seconds in or something, Tim Tszyu landed a nice right hand, and then later in that round, another right hand, and I think there was a left hook in there too. So the first round I thought was close. I thought the first couple were pretty close. I thought you could give some of them to Mendoza. The third round, I kind of thought that's one you could probably do, the left hand to the body, in right hands, like I said, just busier, jabbing, moving and whatnot. Whereas Tim Tszyu kind of off to a slow start. He started to get his jab going though, and left hands to the body and all that. But, then it was pretty much all Tim Tszyu after that. I mean, you really couldn't give Mendoza anything too much after that. I mean, you know, I'm looking at my scorecard again. You know, the sixth round, there was a late exchange of hooks. There was some decent exchanges, more exchanges in the undercard fight. But, you know, you could maybe just off of busy work and spending less time on the ropes, maybe you could give the sixth round to Mendoza, but the left hook, you know, early in the fifth round, and an uppercut, you know, another uppercut. I mean, he was just starting to land, Tim Tszyu, some really, really hard shots. And, you know, don't get me wrong, Mendoza was showing heart. He was fighting back and whatnot. But I'd say in the seventh, like three or four uppercuts in a row, chopping right hands, left hooks, really just, you know, obviously putting in work. I mean, he really was. And, you know, Mendoza, you know, boxing decently with the jab, doing a little body work, scoring some points. But overall, the you know, the better shots were clearly, you know, Timzu. I mean, that's just how it went. And, you know, at times Timzu was looking for that home run right hand, and he swung and missed, but there's plenty of times he didn't. But, yeah, the movement started to slow down a little bit in spots. He picked it back up, talking about Mendoza later in the fight as almost the way of, hey, I'm going to last here, you know. So he had these little pockets of moments and whatnot, but most of it was like pity, Pat. Later in the fight, like 10th round, definitely hurt Mendoza. Big right hands, flurries, almost had a TKO. There was a couple times I had money, plus 210, I think it was, on my bookie on decision for Timzu. And I was sweating it there for a little bit, I'm not going to lie. You know what I mean? I was sweating just a little bit. So, you know, he got there. He got the job done. And I thought it was like a workman-like, you know, type performance. We know that the first couple rounds takes him a little bit. But I love, like, it seems like his guard gets tighter. The way he's got a solid jab, but I love the way he mixes up, you know, his attack. Like I said, some of the right hands, a little wild, right? And he'd probably even tighten up more. But the distance, you know, the way he'll use some defense, right? He is defensively responsible to an extent, of course, but he is. And it seems like as the timing, the distance, he finds his distance, he'll take these little step backs, step to the side, move away, reset, and then go right back at it. He's really coming along as a fighter. And some of these fights, the combination of staying active and seeing different styles. And, you know, like I said, I did like a lot of people were kind of arguing over, and this is a little while ago now, but Timzu or Fundora, who should get the shot at Charlo. And Fundora had kind of established himself, especially with that Lubin stuff in that fight, that a lot of people were like, nah, Fundora should get it. But the belt said, you know, it did seem like Timzu was probably going to get it. Now, obviously, we know the Canelo thing, opportunity fell in his lap, and he took it, blah, blah, blah. But I liked how this organically happened because, you know, had Fundora won, that's the fight everybody would have wanted to see if no Charlo was in the division at the time from the Canelo fight. So I do like that Mendoza got the fight. I think that's pretty cool. And like I said, you know, bring on Charlo. I think that's the fight. If in fact, and actually John and I'm sure he'll bring it up as well, we talked about how it can be, and we talked about this, you know, after the Charlo fight with Canelo, there's some danger about going all the way back to 54. It's impossible, right? And to be fair, on the scale, his body did look not great at that weight, you know, so maybe he'll be able to make it, and there's no problems. We don't know, we don't know, you know. But either way, all things considered, that's the fight that you want to see. And if not, you know, if something were to happen with the Crawford-Spence fight, as far as not happening, that would be a great fight too. But we'll see. Either way, like I said, I just like what Timzu has been doing lately. He's been, you know, like active. He's been fighting solid fighters. So, yeah, I thought it was a really good performance. Now, as far as the co-feature, Sam Goodman and Flores, so Goodman-Flores, you know, Goodman came out with a stiff jab. There was some exchanges throughout the fight. He was definitely landing the better. Flores was mostly with the body work, but he was making Goodman earn it, you know. The third round, Flores definitely had success. That may be the round that you could give them. The fifth and sixth round, the action really started picking up. A lot of inside give and take. Like I said, Goodman landed the better to the head, that's for sure. Whereas Flores mostly to the body. I'm not saying he never landed to the head, but overall, it was mostly to the body. Eighth round, Goodman definitely buzzed him and then dropped him with a left hook. You know, combos to the head and body. You know, somehow, though, Flores still firing back, showing a lot of heart. And he landed, like, not just body, but he landed a nice uppercut. Now, in that, I think it was that same round, he did get a point. Yeah, because it was a 10-7 round. He did get a point deducted for low blows later. I think in the 10th round, he got another one. But I did like how Goodman mixed up his attack. He would reset a lot. He had this little, you know, he'll fight at range, this little subtle movement, working the head and body, throwing different punch combinations. On the inside, brawling, getting the better of that. I thought it was just, where he's at, I thought it was, like, a really good fight for him. Just a solid dude who wasn't going anywhere. And you could see that he kind of improved in that fight. And I think there are some items in there that he could improve on a little bit more, if that makes sense. So that was the Showtime. There was, I didn't score it, but there was kind of an interesting fight, I thought. Did they come in, like, the second round or something like that of that fight? But I didn't score it. I was kind of tied up. So I watched it, but I didn't get a – I was actually on an important phone call, unfortunately. We're all good. Nothing crazy. But at the time, I definitely had to make this phone call. But anyway, so I'm not going to break that down too much. Then you had Jana Beck and Gattieri. Either way, like I said, I got some heat last week for not breaking this fight down as far as a longer segment of breaking it down. For instance, like I had planned for Buatsi and Aziz, but, I talked about it. I talked about how it's probably a mismatch. Like I said earlier in the show, like, on tape, I actually thought this, Gattieri, I didn't think he'd look good or win a bunch of rounds or nothing like that. I thought it was a mismatch, but to be honest, once he got in the ring, it was like, ooh, this is worse than I thought. To be honest, it's nothing against Jana Beck. You know, unifying for him makes a ton of sense because, hey, maybe he will get, now if you fight him, that whole risk-reward, hey, you got two belts, that's something, especially in, just a dead-ass division. Now, there are some, the youth is coming up in that division. There's some 54-pounders that'll go to 60, so let's, hope for the best, because I do think that there could be some fun fights, but, once I saw him throw his first couple punches, and once I saw his leg, his stance, where he had his foot almost off the ring, I thought, wow, does he know where his feet are right now? Because his back foot is almost outside the ring. Like, right off footwork, in the first couple throws, it's like, oh, my God, this is worse than I thought. Now, to his credit, Jana Beck took care of business, right? He had his jab going, body work, blah, 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 uppercut. Definitely hurt him in the fifth, momentarily. Sixth, rest stops in TKO, it's over. There wasn't much there. Keyshawn Davis, on the undercard, easy win. I suppose you could say that he didn't finish all that strong. He is a guy that likes to talk a lot, and he's kind of a funny guy. Sometimes he's a little irritating, to be honest. But, hey, engagement is the name of the game nowadays on social media, especially boxing, Twitter, and whatnot. So I get it, but if you keep doing a habit of, like he was saying at the presser, he's going to He's going to make a highlight reel, this guy. He's going to make him go viral and all that. You keep doing that and saying this and that, and then you just don't, you know, you don't finish strong. And I'm not saying he's got to finish everybody or, you know. This was a good fight. I like this opponent for him, actually. I did, because the dude could fight. He's a good fighter. He keeps Sean look very good. So I thought it was a good step, and I like how they're moving him. I do like how they're moving him. He's faced some solid fighters so far in his career, and we'll see what's next. We'll talk a little bit more as far as wrapping up the weekend and stuff like that. And Goodman, by the way, is number one in both the IBF and the WBO at 122. So, you know, we'll see once in, of course, we know who runs the division. But I don't think, you know, after this fight, we'll talk about, you know, Inoue's fight that's coming up to close the year. That will probably be his last fight. You know, maybe one more there? I don't know. I doubt it. But maybe. But either way, those belts are going to come loose. So we'll see. But Sam Goodman, man, I mean, he has some good wins. And considering how many fights he has, I liked what I saw out of the Aleem fight. I don't know if Aleem fought the right fight against him, but that's his own issue. That's his own problem. You know, Goodman won that fight. It was a good fight, though. It was competitive. And he kind of was a guy that was in the cut, and now he's like, hey, I'm here too. And like I said, even in the rankings, you know, he should be getting some sort of big opportunity or a decent fight or whatever. So we'll talk a little bit more about this stuff, and of course we'll talk about the weekend and whatnot, but let's go ahead and bring in John into the fold. What's going on, John? How the hell are you doing on this fine Tuesday night, my friend?
Doing well, Chris, and of course we've got quite a bit to talk about tonight.
Yes, indeed. We sure do, and some of it is something we've kind of discussed ad nauseum, and that's why I kind of wanted to, you know, start in the ring. Don't get me wrong, it's huge news, but some of the writing has been on the wall for a little while, and we'll definitely talk about that. What'd you think of Tim Zhu's performance, Sam Goodman? You know, where does Zhanabek go from here? Keyshawn Davis, some of the items I was just discussing, I'd like to get your take on that, sir.
Yeah, that's right. I agree. I figured we'll get into the ring from last weekend and, you know, Zhanabek, Almakulula, and Lotfieri. I thought it was a mismatch going in. To me, it was a perfect example of too many belts where the belts are meaningless and fighters who aren't really legitimate top 10 with things getting watered down with weight classes and belts. And that's, you know, Gualtieri, you know, he had a decision over Falcao who, you know, I'm not even convinced was particularly good. He was undefeated, but he didn't have any significant wins on his record, and neither did Gualtieri, and somehow the IBF decided that was for a middleweight belt of theirs. So as you alluded to, this became a unification, you know, fighting Zhanabek Saturday, but you had to just look beneath the surface, and you had a guy who, you know, with a real low KO percentage, and Gualtieri, who just really wasn't that good, and it showed, and it's going to really indirectly tie into what we're talking about later on with some of the out-of-the-ring stuff. You know, this was an ESPN main event. And, you know, as we've talked before, Chris, I think in terms of abilities, I probably rate, you know, Almakulula even a little bit higher than you do. I do think, you know, guys like him and Andrade or, you know, one or two others, legitimate boogeymen in the sense that not that they're unbeatable or a fighter wouldn't fight him with the right payday, but they fall into that small group of fighters where people aren't really going to bother taking them on unless they get a real lot of money. It's not worth it. too difficult of a fight. I do think he is one of those guys, even though it's a very weak division right now. And it's not that he hasn't had a off performance here or there. And very early in his career, he was far too cautious and dull. He has become more aggressive than he was early in his career, where he relied strictly on a more of a modern amateur style boxing. And, you know, he's been with McGirt and he started power punching more, and most of his performances I think then have been good. Like, you know, you look at these decent guys that he blew away, like Brandt. And, you know, he's for guys that just didn't belong in the ring with him, he's had some quick knockouts. The only stumble like that was, you know, he let Bentley go the distance. He just seemed to have an off night there. But mainly, as his career has gone on, he's gotten more aggressive, more power. You know, the quality of opposition hasn't been great. Like I said, probably a lot with who they can get in with him. So I think the top rank was basically pulling a little bit of a charade here, you know, using this guy's alphabet belt to make it a main event and make it pretend the fight was something that it really wasn't. And it always frustrates me when there are people that'll buy into this stuff. Oh, it's a unification. Well, you know, unification of what against who? And I just want to add too on that, you know, Gualtieri, you know, he had gotten in like the transnational top 10. My own personal vote was that he should have never been in there in the first place. You know, it's not like I always say, ratings are not a one-man show when you have a board or a committee, and, you know, that's the way it should be, I understand. So it's not that my thought rules the day on everything, but that was one that, you know, I just think you got to look through the alphabet stuff. And, you know, yeah, Falcao was in there in the top 10. I didn't think he should have been there. He didn't have any significant wins, and it just led to a fight being a main event that really wasn't a main event worthy fight. But Janibek did his job. I always like to see that, Chris, like you and I say, and I always mention, I don't give a fighter points as I would if they were facing tougher opposition, but I do give a fighter some points when they at least execute the assignment by, you know, getting the mismatched opponent out of there and not boxing and the nonsense of have to be careful and just get the win and stuff, not with a guy like this. So Janibek did his job getting him out of there, but we didn't need that. And this wasn't a good top rank card either. Again, it probably fits in what we're going to talk about on the TV side of things later. But look, you know, this is what's being shown in the U.S. is a main event that wasn't good. And then you got, you know, top rank. They keep putting these same fighters out on the undercard, same younger crew, but the opposition they're fighting is not that good. You know, they stepped Keyshawn Davis up earlier, but I don't know. He hasn't looked as good. I mean, for what talent, you know, I thought he had, you know, coming out of the amateurs, and the way he looked early, and they stepped him up, and I really liked it. I was excited about the progression. I don't know. Some of the recent performances haven't looked that good. I mean, he's very young, but, you know, could be just a couple of off nights. Sometimes it's just not linear. It doesn't all go in a line. That's just the way humans perform. But, oh, this one again Saturday night, some of these performances haven't been quite as good. And some of the other guys that they keep showing, I don't know how good they are. I mean, I get interested in, you know, Torres being a heavyweight, but I know, Chris, that you haven't been that impressed with him so far. And, you know, of course, they keep having him out there, and he's not fighting anybody. And, you know, like I said, I'm going to say it again. I keep saying it, but for a reason. You know, he's in the gold medal fight against Shalalov, who had, you know, been having pro fights and is a top prospect. And, you know, he already loses a decision, but he goes the distance. So what is the purpose then when Torres turns pro and you're fighting guys that are a million levels below, you know, Jalalov? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. What are you building up? I mean, and then, you know, it's the old, well, we're building to something. We got to get these guys out there. But let's face it, you know, Top Rank hasn't really built these guys up to anything in recent years. I mean, except, you know, Stevenson maybe, but, you know, the jury's still out on that in terms of how big, and, you know, he hasn't done a pay-per-view yet or anything. Not that I'm looking to pay, but I just mean, you know, in terms of what it's being built up to. So, yeah, building up supposedly, but to what? And then, you know, we've talked a lot of times, too, about how many guys Top Rank ends up letting go. So, you know, you made a really good point a couple weeks ago about that ESPN deal as an expiration date. It's an even more important point with the news we got about Showtime today leaving the sport. And I thought this ESPN card Saturday night, which just wasn't good, the ESPN and the ESPN Plus part, it just wasn't good. It's a good time to point that out, because no matter how optimistic you want to try to be with the troubles boxing's obviously having, maintaining interest, cards like Saturday night's ESPN card are a good example, you know, a high exposure spot to good use. These are the things that lead to the demise of these deals. So that was my take on the Top Rank. The Showtime, Zoo, I thought, you know, he did his job. You know, Mendoza was a pretty significant underdog. You know, remember, he was losing every round against Fondora when he landed those bombs and the huge upset. He took out Rosario before that, but Rosario doesn't take a good shot. So I think outside of that Fondora explosion, you know, Mendoza hasn't shown real that kind of power in his career, or really even winning rounds against some of his better opponents. So I didn't think there was too much suspense there going in, but like you said, I mean, I think Mendoza had earned a good fight and this was it. So I didn't really have a problem with that either. You know, pretty good Showtime fight, at least on paper and interest. Zoo, I liked what you saw. I saw it the same way going in, where I thought Zoo decision was a good bet, a better bet than people were looking at. I jumped on that plus like you did on that, and of course you pointed it out correctly. I think this was the strength of Zoo's performance. I picked Zoo by decision, but I thought if he might have any trouble, it might be late. You know, Mendoza being so durable, if maybe simply from banging him that Zoo got tired out when you got into a 10th, 11th, 12th round, and maybe Mendoza had a better chance late to land something. Instead, it was Zoo who seriously hurt Mendoza, the worst we've seen Mendoza hurt in his career. So I thought that was the most impressive part of the performance by Zoo. I mean, maybe that's obvious, but I mean, I think the fact that going in later in a 12-round fight, that he was able to seriously hurt an extremely durable guy late, that was the most impressive part of the night for him. But I think we do have to just keep some perspective that even with Mendoza, again, with 17 weight classes, you know, here's a guy, he was losing every round against Fondora. He went three perfect bombs, and they were perfect shots. But, you know, outside of that Rosario KO, again, a guy who's not durable, you know, really the career was nothing standout. And, you know, if it weren't for, you know, the Fondora, now he did accomplish that against Fondora, but if it weren't for that, this guy would have been, you know, Mendoza would have been the type of guy, Zoo would have just been fighting his progression on the way up. So let's forget WBO interim. You know, remember, Jesus Ramos has already got a decision win over Mendoza. I saw him in a life and death with Lamana, you know, earlier in his career, where he did legitimately win it, but it was going right down to the end. So probably when you throw away alphabet stuff, and even though Mendoza earned it, you maybe take the Fondora victory for what it was, come from behind where he landed a few bombs and just totally reversed what was happening. Mendoza's probably the kind of guy Zoo would just be fighting on his way up. So, he passed the test in that sense, but that gets to then to me what you said about Charlo. Now that was a fight that I was always all in on Charlo, Jermell Charlo beating Zoo, but you know, things change. And with Jermell being off some, then going up in weight to fight Canelo and having a poor performance, he's got to come back down in weight. He's in his mid-30s now. The dominoes have fallen into place for Tim Zhu. I mean, you know, that fight to me now, I don't even – Charlo was always favored when it was going to happen in the past and then fell out. But I don't know. I mean, that seems to me like an even money or a Zhu. I mean, maybe Zhu even becomes a slight favorite now if Charlo's got to go back down to 154. I'm with you. I mean, still one of the more interesting fights out there that I'd like to see, but – especially coming off a huge payday, too. I mean, you know that Jermell Charlo certainly got his biggest payday of his career by far against Canelo. At the age he's at now, coming back down in weight, is he going to be able to crank it up for Zhu like he could have a couple of years ago? I think that's just a really big question mark. So I think things have really fallen into place for Tim Zhu over the past year or so.
Yeah, it really has. It really has. And it's kind of like, in a sense, you take like a normal a route where, you know, like him getting knocked down early in that fight, you know what I mean? Like he just kind of – and then got right back up and went and dominated the fight against a solid fighter. And, you know, he's taken – I remember you – you had a tweet that about God, what? Oh, Jeff, was it Jeff Horn? Was that the?
Yes.
That
yeah, opened, I said that.
He opened as.
It's hard to believe.
Go ahead.
He just that. But it is a fact. It is amazing the way the perception of Tim Zhu has changed.
Yeah.
Including myself, he opened as an underdog against Jeff Horn, and look where he is now.
Yeah, that is funny. That's really funny. And like I said, when you come over here and you fight in America a little bit, or you're at least on Showtime, you know, American, you know, was after this year no longer, but it is funny how, like, you got a right hand, puts you on your butt, and people even from that were like, I don't know, man. And that's easy to say because, you know, Charlo has a ton of power at that. Wake Lawson is a way better fighter than the guy he fought. And he wouldn't be able to do some of the things, you know, he did to him. But, yeah, I mean, that Tony Harrison fight was a great fight for him. And, you know, I did like he took a little injury a while back now, but I liked how he's like, all right, well, Charlo's hurt, I'm going to keep fighting. Okay, they're going to take this fight, I'm going to keep fighting. So that was really smart to do. And he says now, you know, I'm done with fighting over here, you know, for now anyway. And basically he's coming to America. He wants all the big fights. I do think that he could create some, like in a Charlo fight, if it were doing in Vegas or someplace, I think that you could get some Australians to come over or the ones that live here and garner some attention. But because, you know, in countries where they're not used to having multiple champions and stuff like that all the time, of course, they have a track record of solid fighters and whatnot. But, you know, it's not a huge, huge sport there or whatever. Not, I mean, what, the UK and Mexico is like where it's the biggest. But as far as, you know, ranking in their countries, you know, but I think that a lot of times in countries like that or Ireland or whatever, I think a lot of times they kind of get behind their guy because they're like, hey, we don't get a ton of these. This is pretty cool. So let's go support our guy. So I do think that he could have a nice crowd over here if it were a Charlo fight or if it were a Crawford fight or something like that, a little bit bigger, obviously, but yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for that fight or just his, the rest of his career. You know, he's really really come around, no doubt about it. And, yeah, I mean, I'm not down on Jana Beck because, you know, you're going to have some mediocre performances. And I thought he took care of business. I wasn't going to spend a bunch of time breaking down that fight. That's really what that's all about. And I got some messages after I did the show, and it's like, all right, but I mean, look at how it turned out. I mean, what were we supposed? Was I supposed to have some kind of 20-minute preview on that fight? Like, it is what it is. I understand. Like you said, I understand that the belts were there. That's cool, but you know, it doesn't make him like. I think it helps to have two belts for him. I do think that that's at least helps. You know, the incentive to fight him. Because like you said, he isn't that – I don't like the word boogeyman at all because I don't like how they go for it. Like him – well, maybe he didn't tweet it, but, you know, it's his account, so he's responsible for it. Talking about he can knock out Canelo easy and stuff like that. That's just engagement. That's cool. You know what I mean? I just don't – I'm not a big boogeyman type of guy, but the low – you know, the high risk, low reward, or, hey, I could make more money fighting a – slightly lesser opponent, I'd be fine with that type of stuff. So I do agree with that, and that's why I think that this made a lot of sense, considering what's out there right now. So most of, you know, Top Rank either doesn't have connections to the middleweights who are, you know, older, veteran guys with names, or, you know, and then the up-and-comers, a couple up-and-comers, that's what he's going to have to go after, because some of those younger guys, that all of a sudden makes a lot of sense. Hey, dude, I can fight him, and that's two belts? I'm going to do it. So I did like how he took care of business and whatnot. So, yeah, I mean, you know, beyond, like, I got to admit, that Buatsi and Aziz fight, I had interest in it because of the style matchup. I did want to see, you know, Aziz is a guy who didn't have that long amateur career. He started boxing, you know, around the same time, and they're in the same gym and all that stuff. Spent a ton of hours sparring him and Buatsi, Aziz. But Buatsi went on to have a much better, you know, a deeper pedigree and you know, won a medal and whatnot. And but now where you look, you know, Aziz is built his way up in a short, well, not in a short amount of time, but not with a lot of names on his resume, that's for sure. But some of them, especially more domestic over there. But I really wanted to see how Buatsi's jab and movement and defense was going to be able to handle Aziz, but it sounds like Aziz hurt his back in his last sparring session. So that kind of sucks. And, you know, we're about to talk about Showtime, but you know, that is the one thing about boxing that we've also talked about is, you know, when the NFL has a game, someone's hurt, they're going to still have a game. You know, people are going to still, you know, whereas in boxing, yeah, they're still going to have a card, but it's just a different sport like that. It's not a team sport. Even like a tennis tournament, you're still going to have seeds and all that. You're still going to have pretty quality matchups, you know, per se, but Peacock, NBC Sports, their first one was like, oh, the main event's not happening. Great, you know, but that's boxing. And that is one of those things that at times do hamper stuff and can draw some of the investment like, I don't know. But I think that is cool for boxer who has a deal with Sky Sports and now with Peacock, NBC Sports. It sounds like the deal may include what I'm assuming an afternoon NBC card. That would be dope. But, you know, it is a wait and see because of the product that we've seen so far from Boxer on Sky Sport. I'm glad they have, you know, an outlet over here because it had been dodgy. So that's really cool. But it is a wait and see based off what they've done so far. Now, they're somewhat new in the game as far as being at a higher level promotion now. So I am willing to just wait and see what they give us. This first fight would have been good. Like I said, I like the co-feature, though. Now that's the main event, but I kind of liked it as a co-feature instead. But any thoughts on, you know, Catterall Linares or even Rocha, who's in there with, you know, a solid dude? He should win, though.
Hey, Catterall and Linares, I mean, Linares is basically finished. So I don't really like the fight. I think it's a time waster. I don't think it's at this stage really main event material. So that's kind of, for me, and something that's in the wrong direction. You know, Roach's looked, it's again with the boxing politics, you know, finding opponents really for him to fight at this point now that he has advanced. I mean, he's, everybody regards him now as a legit top 10 guy, including myself, but the opponents aren't really there to match, and that's part of the problem with boxing. And what you said about Boxer, you know, is correct, Chris. If you go back to when boxing had really gone through a golden era, you know, at the start of the 80s, really, you know, from roughly that 80 to 82, 83 type time, but it was so big during that period that definitely was a golden era. You know, when the networks, you know, and then when I say this, people will pull out like some fight that was on in 1990 that I'm aware of as well and say, oh, well, boxing was still on, you know, ABC in 1990 or whatever. Yeah, I get that, but it wasn't on the scale that it was on, you know, in the early 80s, right, and before that. And nobody can dispute that based on the number of shows, the investment, the popularity, et cetera. So I'm getting on to your point, which was correct. If you look at the network boxing executives from the early 80s, you know, the old quotes, and, you know, boxing history is one of my things too, and in all realms, and, you know, lived through it, but then have looked back at it since. You know, there's two things they really point out. I mean, it's not really legend. I mean, it was said at the time, and it's true, and it was on national TV in the U.S. when boxing was getting huge ratings. You know, when Dooku Kim died against Ray Mancini, that really was one of the things that led to the end of that era and led to the networks getting out of things. But another thing that led to it was just what you described, like, which has already happened with this Boxer on Peacock, NBC, before they've had their first show. The executives also said it was, as you just described, all, you know, all the uncertainty about, you know, fighters pulling out and these and, you know, trying to get matchups set, and the uncertainty when they, you know, when they're trying to set dates for programming and everything, that after the violence aspect, you know, with the Mancini Kim being on national TV on CBS in the afternoon. Matter of fact, that's coming up on 41 years ago. It was in November 13th of 82, I think. So around this time of year, those were the two things that led to the boxing demise, as the widespread exposure, and that eventually, as it wasn't seen as much and the matchups weren't as good, the ratings finally declined, because there was a long period too during that golden type era and before and after that for a long time, where what has changed, and this is what's always troubled me, and is going to get into what we were talking about, because I have been raising this as we've talked over recent years, is that there was a time when boxing, whenever they would show it, okay, like when the networks did decide to show it, the ratings were always very high. In other words, all they had to do was put it on, and they knew it was going to get a good rating. Right. And it was actually the opposite of what you had now. It was actually kind of like amazing. Like, you know, you didn't have a buildup like an NFL or a Major League Baseball or NBA, but they would just, like, throw these fights on, and they would get these, like, huge ratings. Like, you know, there would be fighters then that were just, like, popular on TV, like, you know, somebody like a Cornelius Boza Edwards in the early 80s, just because he was in a bunch of, you know, he was in a brawl every time he was out there. And of course, you know, legendary Matthew Saad Muhammad, who of course was a higher level fighter, but, you know, always in those brawls that people still talk about today, and Miracle Matthew with the comebacks. But like, these fights would come on, and, like, you know, casual people would watching, and you just get these ratings. You look at the numbers now, that's, you know, that's just not happening.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I remember, now this goes back a handful of years. It was on a night, I think it was it the Herd J-Rock fight or something like that? And I remember because there was a bump on ESPN, there was a bump on Fox, and it was just a good night, and they didn't clash, actually. And I remember you showing, like, an example of what CBS, NBC, ABC, you know, like, I remember you showed an example of, hey, just look at what was on TV on basic, you know, on linear television. I remember that tweet you had a while back now, 2019
yeah.
stuff. But I remember that. It's like, man, wow, like that is crazy. And yeah, when you look at those ratings, it is nuts. And even like, you know, sometimes because I'm a little younger, I would get confused on the Wide World of Sports stuff, you know, how much different stuff they had on there. And it wasn't just boxing. In my head, a lot of that was just boxing. But they would go to random sports and stuff and outdoor stuff and strongman stuff and you name it. They would Wide World of Sports, right? But you're right. When you go back and look at those ratings, it doesn't have to be Ali or anything like that. You know, I mean, it was, like you said, there was guys that were just fight fans' favorites because they were in brawls. And, yeah, the ratings were crazy. No doubt about it. So basically we now know officially, and I remember even a couple weeks ago, you know, hearing about an announcement, people talking about an announcement, Espinoza interview said when that time comes, it will be announced. And at the time, a few weeks ago, that it hadn't been fully decided, and, you know, you'll find out when you find out. And we found out. Paramount Plus, you know, has axed Showtime Boxing, Showtime Sports in general. And like I said at the beginning of the show, John, you know, you never really like people getting fired, losing their jobs, obviously. That's part of it that people don't really think all the way through. It is pretty crazy. At the same time, like I said, the writing was on the wall. And if you look at the behind-the-scenes corporate structure that went on here, CBS, Viacom, Paramount, you know, Global, like a bunch of stuff happening in the background, that's where the writing was on the wall. And when we're talking about streaming being the future, it's just a matter of when that's going to happen. Because if you look at the NBA, college football, and the NFL, they still have long-term, not 15 or 20 years, but long-term deals on linear TV, right? But even those, like Thursday Night Football, it's an 11-year deal. They're in their second year of it, you know. Amazon Prime took over that Thursday night slot that had kind of moved around. Fox had it last. And the type of investment of $1 billion a year shows you how ready they are to be in sports. Amazon Prime, we'll talk about that a little later and the potential on that. But and even, you know, there's rumors that the NBA will have a partial streaming deal in there, along with their, you know, it sounds like NBC is going to get back in a little bit, especially for playoffs and whatnot. But we know it's just a matter of time. Now, you know, we've seen how much money was spent in these quote-unquote streaming wars. And I think it's just Netflix. And I actually heard that Hulu has become somewhat profitable. But they're not many of them are profitable just yet. But like you said, when you see Amazon for sports and entertainment, I mean, we know they got the funding, and we know they mean business. And for you to already, like, how smooth their broadcast is as far as, you know, when you have 13 or 18 or 15 million people tuning in at a time, it's actually not that easy to have a legit stream like that. Live streaming instead of something on archive is different, and they've done a hell of a job there. I'll give them credit there. But yeah, just a matter of time. If you look at where cable is as far as subscribers being below 70 million now, haven't seen a new figure just yet, but you know, it's right at like 68 or 69. When will that drop down to below 50? To below 40. I remember sometime in the early 90s, it was like 35 million homes had cable TV. So speaking of the writing on the wall, it's just a matter of who wins the streaming wars, and it's all about trying to make it profitable. You have to plan for the future, but it is expensive, you know, and like I said, Netflix finally started making some money, but back to the Paramount thing, and like I said, you know, if you look at Disney with ESPN Plus and ESPN in general and how that juggernaut for so many years is dependent on cable TV, and that they're starting to say, hey, maybe we'll share some of that asset instead of owning the 80% that they do or whatever. And obviously ESPN Plus, it's the streaming wars, and a lot of it, you know, is a lot of investment for the future, but you know, it is what it is. There's, you know, like I said, it's not a big shocker, but now that we know for a fact, you know, it does make me wonder where the PBC goes from here. Now, depending on the source that you hear, you know, Mannix said last week or something, or early, maybe yes. No, I think it was last week. He said that they're taking meetings with Amazon Prime. Definitely didn't mention finalizing a deal, but there are people out there that are just as good a source as him when it comes to boxing, because he could be pretty misleading, to be honest, anyway. You know, that they're actually in the process of finalizing the deal. Some people say it's already done. If you look at some of the people tied directly to Heyman, even like an Andre Berto, you know, my guess is that it's either being finalized or it is finalized. But it is what it is, you know. We don't know whether that would be Amazon Prime, whether that would be Netflix, who's actually just getting into a live streaming sport event coming up here in like a month, or whether it's DAZN. You know, I can understand why boxing fans would want it on DAZN, especially if they kept that price where it was. Well, especially if they dropped the price a little bit. But, you know, as long as they didn't go jacking up the price more or something. But I can understand the idea, John, of, well, if you get the PBC and you have Matchroom and you have Golden Boy under one umbrella, that's a positive thing. And so I can understand that. Now, remember, Golden Boy and Matchroom had a lot of 160-pounders and not a lot of fights beyond the first couple established ones. Canelo and Jacobs, and then you also, as far as in-house, they did have Saunders and Andre, which I always get them credit for making, obviously, you know, they didn't go revisit that fight, which you could kind of tell they were saving Saunders for Canelo, but that doesn't guarantee it. You know, it's different than one entity buying up Top Rank, Golden Boy, Matchroom, and PBC, and having control of it, right? That's a whole different ballgame than, hey, we're all on the same platform. Well, a lot, you know, there was more than one, you know, promotional company on HBO, you know, for a long time. So it doesn't mean that all these fights will all of a sudden happen. Now, do they have a better shot at it? Sure, I can see that argument, but when you look at the penetration of DAZN in the U.S., there are other markets like Japan and other places where, because of soccer, they can, you know, have a lot more subscribers. But here, they haven't really penetrated the sports market. That's just honest. So, you know, would I rather it be on Amazon? Well, yeah, sure. Of course I would. But, you know, I understand the sentiment. If it goes to DAZN, I get why people would think, on the surface, how, well, wait, you know, if they're all on one platform, that does help. So what are your thoughts just in general as far as, you know, Showtime going out of business? And then what are your thoughts on the home of the PBC?
I think, first of all, with the Showtime news, with what you've heard from Steven Espinosa very recently, it's not a surprise, but I think you got to take it back a bit. If we're talking 6 months ago, this is a big surprise. This is shocking news. So I think
that's a good way to reference that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we got to be fair, Chris. I think we got to kind of look at it that way because, look, you know, you go back to the spring and you're talking about Davis Garcia's getting made and happening and a $1.2 million pay per view, a bit.
Spence Crawford, and yeah, expected. That's true.
And then, you know, Spence Crawford made after that, people are talking about great year for the sport and anybody that said boxing's fading or et cetera, you're wrong. And look at this year, everybody celebrate. And in a way, he's fighting Fulton. And I think we got to break all this down. First, some credit to Stephen Espinosa because, you know, you and I have said it before and, you know, boxing's a rough business and he's been in it and you had to protect your turf and market things and things like that. But with that stuff all understood, I always felt like the guy was always pretty candid and started hearing some now in more recent months, comment I heard out of him that got me thinking it. I mean, I didn't immediately take it to Showtime's going to be out of boxing by the end of the year. But
he had said
a few months ago
something was changing, you know.
Yeah, it was getting to like what I was saying before. He was kind of like alluding to those problems that went back 40 years ago, like which, you know, he's the TV exec in the business. It's all true. But, you know, I hadn't heard him really talk that way. This was before his most recent set of interviews too, like say a month or so ago. Like he said, you know, there's advertisers that just don't want to get into this and be associated with it on these broadcasts, you know, even pay-per-view because of the violence, you know, and what can happen. And you've had some history of that. It's not as simple as just getting, you know, advertisers to sign on board because a lot of them have problems with that. And that had always been true, at least since the early 80s, like I said, when the golden era faded. And I thought, look, Stephen Espinosa's talking like that. I thought, I think that's true, but I thought to myself, you know, I wonder why he's saying that now. It must be getting kind of rough out there. And I thought about, even though I know he's with Showtime, but you and I talked about, you know, why didn't this expand to CBS? And, you know, PBC was first getting into it. They had the complimentary, you know, Showtime on CBS broadcasts of, you know, Thurman Garcia and Thurman and Porter. And, you know, I thought that was the way to do it. You know, you're taking a little bit of a hit on your getting your Showtime subscriptions, but you're getting these guys seen, getting high. And those fights did get much higher ratings. You know, building up the base for PBC, what they're trying to do, get fights back on free TV to build these guys up and where you ultimately to pay per view. So that was done. They got away from that. And then, you know, Fox had the Fox part of the PBC deal. Let's face it, especially now that the dust is really settled, you know, it did end up going bad. It didn't work out. So you had those kinds of issues. And then Espinosa was talking that way. And That caught my eye. I wasn't sure why he was talking that way, even though it was true. And then about a month ago, you know, I pointed that out when we were talking, you know, on the show, that he gave the interview to Boxing News, you know, the British boxing publication that's real credible, goes back to 1909, kind of like the, you know, the Ring. It goes back, even predates the Ring, but so it's been like the Ring in the UK, but still going, you know, strong over there. But, you know, Stephen Espinosa, you know, intelligent guy, he knows that. So he gave a very candid interview to Boxing News, what, like a month ago. And he said what's all come up today, like we might be out of this, you know, we might be out of this. And so then you're right. It's like not a surprise now when you heard him talking that way, but kind of was a surprise over those few months that it just developed. In that sense, seemed to develop quickly that Showtime and boxing in general was having a year that people, hardcore fans, were celebrating, and here we are in October, and they're going to be out of the sport by the end of the year. That's a pretty big turnaround. And you're right about the way streaming's coming on. There's no doubt about that. But, and I've seen people tweeting this out tonight, but it's not exactly true. Like, you know, this move, Showtime's getting out because streaming's the future. Like, yeah, it's part of that. But, like, these are problems with boxing. I mean, that's where I got to give a little pushback, that, not on you, Chris, but I mean on some of these other people. Like, you can't stick your head in the sand. Hey, we're just moving to a new platform. You know, all is well. You know, it's like you hit the iceberg, and you're saying everything's fine. Not really. Yeah, streaming. I'm not arguing that streaming is ultimately the future. Technology's changed. I mean, I knew that when I was advocating for what PBC was doing, getting eyeballs on broadcast TV, because, just like you said, with the NFL, I mean, the NFL is not pulling off a, you know, traditional linear broadcast TV yet. I mean, obviously for good reason.
Yeah, they just re-upped. They just got a brand new deal. Same with the NBA is about to announce it.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that.
And college football. Look at the Big Ten. You know, the Big Ten has an 8-year deal, and most of it's on linear, CBS, NBC, and Fox.
Right. It doesn't mean it's going to stay the same forever, but you can have both. You know, you can add the streaming to your traditional platform. So when boxing, and you pointed out a couple weeks ago, a real good point, because I think that's the next big issue, and I think we do see where that's coming now after what just happened with Showtime. That ESPN deal with Top Rank's not going to get renewed. I mean, that's, you might as well just start talking about it, because you get cards like Saturday night. It's just not going to do it. Yeah, Shakur will get some ratings, but he's about all you got left. Well, and Tio, you know, his ratings are strong, but not much. You know, not too many guys. You know, not too many people that are going to drive. And you know that. And even with those guys' ratings, it's relatively speaking. You know, that's compared to kind of the rest of boxing, but it's subject to debate. How good those ratings are concerning the cost to put the stuff on for what else they could show. So that's going to be the kind of the next shoe to drop. But I mean, this move, it's not just that boxing's just going to streaming and boxing, you know, that's the argument they try to make for DAZN. And, you know, people like you and I were saying that's nonsense. And that ended up being true. That's why I don't think DAZN's the answer for, PBC. Frankly, I think the zone's on their way out too. I'll make that call, and I know I'm citing all the current platforms, but I think that's the reality we're faced with.
You're talking about boxing in the U.S. Is that what you're talking about for DAZN?
Right. I'm saying for boxing in the U.S. So I think it's, you know, and obviously the boxer series on NBC is not going to carry things in the U.S. You know, showing UK fighters. I do think there's a little bit of an opening. Like you said, I've said this for a couple of years, the kind of late afternoon window in the U.S. might work a little for something like that, but that's still not going to drive major interest or anything. So I think it comes down to, does PBC stay together, and where do they end up if they do? And remember, I'm surprised it hasn't been talked about more, but I'm taking note of this because, you know, of course, he's on social media and everything. I don't see any panic out of Canelo yet, so that would fit the theory that you mentioned, that something's going on, and Leonard Ellerbe tweeted something out a couple hours ago, and I take it seriously because he would know, even if he's maybe got some bias. I mean, he's saying, I'm not worried, wait till you see what's coming. My first thought was what you've been saying, the Amazon deal, and that is being reported. But then it goes back to those issues that we kind of talked about earlier. Is Amazon willing to, you know, be associated with boxing? I mean, boxing fans may not like that, but that's a real issue for these, you know, these entities and these advertisers. I mean, if they are,
and how much would they push it anyway, you know?
Right. And then if they're squeamish about it, right, how much do they push it? I mean, if they're willing to be associated with it, I mean, in the modern way things are going, like you said, I mean, the NFL's got a decent broadcast with them. You know, so many people have Amazon Prime now. I would feel like that's with boxing situation, if they would be interested, that would be the best landing spot. I don't think the I don't think the zone's going anywhere in the U.S., so I don't think that would be good. I think if they were going to do it, and to me it's totally theoretical, but kind of the way you described it, Chris. But I just don't see the way boxing's at now with the way they're milking the hardcore fan, they would do it. I mean, if they were willing to PBC in, and then for that $22-$23 a month, they were going to mainly just have those fights on there with a truly occasional pay-per-view.
Yeah, almost what DAZN was going for, where you're like, oh, that's going to be on straight-up Amazon? Okay.
Yeah, like if DAZN was going to do it, but I don't think they – like if DAZN was going to do that with Golden Boy, Matchroom, and PBC, you might say as a hardcore fan, hey, I'm going to pay $24 a month for that.
If they
only got to pay for one pay-per-view a year, but I just don't think they're going to do that, and I don't think DAZN will do it. So, yeah, that would be the ultimate ideal would be then what you just alluded to. Like if Amazon picked up PBC and then they were going to do what DAZN was going to do, that would be great. I don't think that happened, but I guess for the boxing optimists out there, which there actually are a lot of them, and I frankly don't think they're realistic a lot of times, but for those boxing optimists out there, I would say that's your best case scenario, that Amazon, kind of like DAZN was going to do, and DAZN, remember, wanted the NFL. Amazon's already got that because they had the money.
Yeah.
If they're saying, well, we got NFL, we're going to fill up some dates because we want to be in sports with boxing programming, and we're going to kind of do what DAZN was going to do, and we're going to, you know, just have all the fights on Amazon Prime. I mean, that would be your ultimate best case scenario. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think even if it's just PBC having some pay-per-views and then getting some of their guys' dates on Amazon Prime can do. I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't know if Amazon wants in. I mean, Bezos has the Washington Post. I mean, he's in other things. I mean, but that would be, if you ever got on there, that would be great. I mean, you know, they got, Amazon's got the Washington Post and things like that. See, even though it's streaming.
Yeah, we're trying to
just
be realistic. You know, we're not trying to bend over backwards with optimism, but, you know, going over the different potential, you know, landing spots.
Yeah, that would be the best. I mean, I don't know if Netflix would have interest. That wouldn't be bad. It troubles me that, you know, what boxing fans should be troubled about, and this is where a lot of them are sticking their head in the sand. And, you know, look, you and I have been big supporters of what PBC tried to do. I make no apologies for that. I still like what they tried to do. They took a shot, and I always like quoting Dana White because I think Dana told the truth on that. I mean, he actually – you know, 2015, he was interviewed basically supporting what Al Haymon was trying to do. He said somebody needed to do this.
Yeah.
It's long overdue. I think Dana White was just telling the truth there. I mean, and then, you know, Haymon ran into all kinds of resistance from competitors in boxing. And like I've said a lot of times, you know, because I think this is some of the stuff that's led to today, though, you know, kind of a misinterpretation of what the Ali Act was originally designed to do, and it's not really being utilized, you know, for what it was designed to do, and it's kind of out of date in that sense. Yeah, you know, then, hey, look, I want the boxers to make as much as possible, you do, but when people, you know, talk about, like, how much Canelo makes, and then, you know, maybe you look at, you know, what Terrence Crawford just made, say, or something like that, or Wilder. Yeah, I'm in favor of all that, but there's guys fighting on undercards, literally risking their brain health and death for $1,000. That's not
right.
You know, that's not a good system. I mean, that's not a revenue share of the sport. You know, so it's not all good for the boxers. It's good for some.
There's
boxers.
No union involved with that. No union would sign up for that.
Right. Exactly. So that is the point. Like, you know, I want Canelo and Floyd Mayweather and Deontay Wilder and everybody else to make all that money, but when nobody else is that's out there taking and they are taking the same risks. Let's face it, the risks are the same. So, you know, when they're taking the same risks and you're not making any money, that's not really a great system. I mean, you know, so in other words, what I'm saying is when people say, how bad UFC is, where the top guys don't make what Canelo makes or what Floyd Mayweather make. I agree. I like boxing better that way. I'd rather have the guys taking the risk make the money. But to say that it's a great system compared to UFC, when you look at the bottom part of the boxing system, or not even the bottom, just everybody below the very top, it's, you know, yeah, I'd rather have the boxers get that money than Dana White and the, you know, Endeavor, but it's not a great system either. So what I'm saying is, I think that's what Al Haymon was kind of trying to do at the beginning. Like, you know, when he, remember, I like getting back to this because it was the right idea, but they just couldn't hold it. They didn't talk about the alphabets for the first year. They ignored them. I still love that part. I mean, it, like, what was that, like 2015? They wouldn't mention the alphabets on their show.
They wouldn't show it. They wouldn't show them getting belted and stuff like that. And a lot of writers would just be like, they their whole life they've been working for this, and now they're, you know, all this stuff. It's like, dude, it's really not that big of a deal. Calm down, you know? Just like having the fighter walk out alone. Who cares, you know,
right,
if the fighter walks out alone?
I thought that was all pretty good. That's what I mean. I missed that. I mean, that's 8 years ago, but like that's kind of what I'm sad about today. And I don't think these PBC haters, like, they weren't right about anything. It was just, you know, Al Haymon was taking a shot at the sport was in decline and trying to see if he could make something happen and, you know, maybe take boxing as an undervalued product. I mean, and that's what the investors agreed. I mean, and they know what risks they're taking, you know, trying to see if maybe we've got an undervalued product here. And then DAZN followed along, and so did ESPN. They ended up going along the same line.
Yeah, yeah.
So They went along Heyman's original line. Hey, we got something undervalued here. I can pump none other than Dana White, like I keep saying. He even thought it was a good idea. But, you know, there were just too many things working against it. So what can you salvage with it now? You know, Amazon would seem to be the best shot, but what I wonder is if let's say Amazon's not interested. I mean, boy, it could be pretty bad. Where it would seem to have some value would just be like, you know, boxing's year round, and in theory, I mean, if you take all the fighters, you know, in the world, that's what PBC is good that they have a lot of guys, you know. You could have, like, if the fights didn't fall out, I mean, you could have a lot of fights a week. And somebody picks up a TV product, they like that. I mean, that's what's kept baseball alive, believe it or not, all these years. It's just, you know, they got so many dates that it fills up 6 months of these regional sports networks programming. They can run it out there every day. That, I mean, would maybe be where there's some value. But again, the fight's got to be decent enough where people are going to watch them. If people don't watch them, it just doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's really tough to see exactly where that is. I mean, you know, and we've been honest here, you know, as far as going back to, you know, a lot of people love to HBO and Showtime in this matter. They've been in the business so long, of course, on both networks. Obviously, HBO at the time for boxing was always the big brother. But, you know, we have so many memories. And, you know, the one thing I always remember about HBO is, you know, the broadcast, right? And
right,
the way they were able to deliver it, that did, you know, set the standard that, you know, it was very tough to keep up with, especially when it went away. We can have debates about certain people behind the mic, but at least there would be a little debate within there to kind of at least make double points in there, both have points in there to kind of be like, well, actually, Larry, or this, they'd say that. You know, at least there was – now we just see over-the-top bandwagging on all the platforms to the
right
point where it's just like, come on, you know. At least you had Lampley saying, well, I don't know about that. Or didn't you say, you know, you look bad today, you win, and then you move on. And, you know, they'd at least have a debate going on to where both sides could at least be heard or whatever. But, you know, in the end, though, if we're being honest, you know, it definitely shrunk the sport going to HBO. Boxing helped build HBO. And we just talked about PBC. We talked about DAZN. We talked about this investment stuff. Well, that's exactly what HBO did. They paid more. So, of course, that's going to get more people here, or boxers and managers and promoters, right? And then, you know, it did take it off. A combination of stuff happened there. But then, obviously, the pay-per-view, and that's where it is a business. And I don't know how far it would stray from that business just because a very small amount of people can make money off that and lots of it. Like you said, even if it did go to something like Netflix or Amazon, for there not to be one pay-per-view, I just don't know if that's true because that's part of the revenue. You know, they're going to want to see something, you know. Now, if you could put Canelo and Gervonta, and, yeah, those guys will get sign-ups. Subscriber, sure, at least for a fight, you know, if they only fight twice a year like a lot of boxing does, well, then they're probably going to not be on it, then whatever. I could see some of that if they're not pay-per-view, but the grand scheme of things, it would have to be like, you know, I don't know. There's so much money that way that you can, I don't know. I just don't know if that would ever go away. To be honest with you. But, yeah, I mean, as far as, you know, there's plenty of things that I'll remember, but I'm definitely not one of these stuck on a platform type things. So do I miss HBO every weekend in and out? No, I don't, you know, or even like the last couple of years of HBO was pretty mediocre. You know, ESPN yeah. Friday Night Fights was pretty mediocre. Like,
right.
So I'm not, it's really about what's next rather than, oh my God, boxing's dead, because NBC, we all know if anybody that watched the NBA on NBC, that theme music that you always hear when the playoffs come around, and they got out of the business a while ago. Now they're going to get back into it, at least somewhat anyway. Things come and go. It is what it is. I never got into that HBO versus Showtime stuff. You know, this year Showtime had the better year. DAZN was the network of the year last year. It is what it is. If you put the best stuff on, that's who we're going to go with for this year. You put the best stuff on, cool. But to sit there and get, you know, tied into this stuff, it does get a little over the top. And I'll say this, like I said earlier before you got on, the sentiment in the last few years of Showtime compared to HBO, it's pretty obvious that the common denominator, or not the common denominator, but the one thing as far as Al Haymon, the PBC, prior to them going over there, there wasn't this, you know, F Showtime, Showtime's dead, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't all that stuff, you know. They weren't ripping. In fact, when Al and Golden Boy were over there, all of a sudden it was more of an even battle online, you know, because of Golden Boy and Oscar, obviously. A lot of people love him, and as a fighter, I sure did too. But to get so lost in that, and obviously payola does play a part in that. We know that for a fact. That's not some kind of made-up thing. I mean, even Eddie Hearn said it for DAZN. If you look at, like we said, with HBO, when the budget started shrinking and then Showtime's budget increased, all of a sudden it was a fair fight, and they felt like, well, we're going to just invest in something else. And I remember the person in charge at the time said, PBC coming in with this investment, it did change the market. And that was, of course it did. It totally did. And it made them rethink it. But it's funny how if you look at what DAZN was overpaying for fights, like $10 million for Vargas and Mikey Garcia. Like, if we can all agree that the salaries went up and the budget went up with that investment with the PBC, which that is a fair assessment, then that's where the unfairness comes, the non-biased look at it is, Well, shit, if you're all caught up on that one, then you really should be like, what the hell did DAZN do? Because what that did is raise everybody's money, their baseline for their guarantees. Not everybody, but the top, you know, look at Theories. Look at Wilder. Look at Crawford. Look at some of these guys. Right when DAZN hit the market with all this money, they had to hold on to their assets. So, yeah, as a boxing fan, and like I said, ultimately it'd be great if somebody, and a lot of people will talk about the UFC Endeavor, right, that they would just buy up Top Rank, Golden Boy, Matchroom, and PBC, just buy it all up. Now, the people can still work there. I'm not saying fire everybody, you know, that would be silly. But, like, at least then you'd own it, and then you could start saying, these are the fights I want, blah, 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 blah. Let's make the undercard, this, that, and the other. Well, then now we're talking. And you put that puppy on ESPN, ESPN Plus, or whatever, Prime, or whatever the hell it would be. Now we're talking, because now you're actually going to get most of the fights you're going to want to. Now, don't be surprised, though, then, if there still wasn't, you know, because there's no one supervising it federally, really, they'd be thinking business, too. If you don't think that, you're out of your mind, you know. They'd be still, well, let's wait till next year to make that fight. Because why? Because it's going to draw more interest. So now, does it need to be pushed off for 4 to 5 years? No, I do think that would be an improvement. And the mid-level fights would be made at a much higher rate. That has been one of the coolest things, is the mid-level quality fight has gotten a lot more exposure since 2015 on ESPN, Fox, all this stuff. It really has. But there's just so many dates. Even with the cutback in dates after COVID, there were still so many dates that we knew that there was good, you know, do I want to go all the way back to pre, you know, where the summers, I'd say pre-2015, where the summers sometimes you'd have to wait like 4 to 5 weeks for the next big fight? No, I don't. But we don't need three events going head-to-head on a Saturday night either. That's not going to get you anywhere either. So it's kind of a mixed blend of everything. And like I said, we'll see what the future holds. There's all sorts of rumors out there. Any other items that you'd like to discuss, sir?
The only other final thoughts I'd have on that, Chris, is one thing I want to say, because I've been thinking about this for a while, and I keep meaning to mention it, but I haven't, and it totally fits what we're talking about tonight with the loss of the Showtime deal and what's next. You know, I think even though, and you know, there's times where I've watched MMA and boxing, you know, UFC and boxing, you know, always, you know, follow boxing more, but there's been times where I have followed MMA more than I am right at the moment. But so I'm not saying you can't watch both and everything. You can, and you know, it's in theory there can be overlapping fan bases, but I think what's been underrated and has hurt is that when, you know, the UFC and MMA got popular, I think people think it did this, but it really didn't. Like, even if there are different fans, I'm just going to make up a number. This isn't like a real number or what I have, but it'll just, you know, I have any information on, but it's just going to illustrate my point. Let's just say it was the year 1997. Let's just say in the U.S. there was 5 million boxing fans, okay? And boxing, even then, in, say, 1998, you know, it's dwarfed by the NFL, you know, Major League Baseball, NBA, and,
sure,
you know, you're not getting talked about like you were in the, you know, the 80s, the 70s, the 60s, you know, the 1920s, et cetera. But boxing was still kind of part of the public consciousness. It would get mentioned here or there, and then you'd have a huge fight like, you know,
yeah, you have the flagpole events, yeah, the big events, and that's about it.
Yeah, like Hagler Leonard, and you know, things was 87,
right.
And you know, Tyson, and like things where you would get mainstream people talking about it, knowing what it was. So let's say at that point, if maybe there was 5 million boxing fans, and then you'd have a mega event, and then you'd get people talking about on NFL broadcasts, NBA broadcasts, you know, down at your local bar or club or whatever, or just, you know, whenever you run into somebody with a big event. I think, like, when MMA got popular, it didn't expand the – again, I'm just totally making up a number. So then let's say as a couple decades went by, I think, like, the 5 million boxing fans, then it was probably, like, 2 million boxing fans and maybe 3 million MMA fans or something like that. The point I'm trying to make of all this is, like combat – you know, then you called it combat sports, the two combined. Like, it didn't get any bigger. It just divided up the same pie. And I think that's what we're seeing now. Like, in other words, you know, when UFC first got their Fox deal and then it went over to ESPN, you know, they've tried to make, like, it you know, oh, we're getting bigger, we're going mainstream. But that never really happened. All it was like they took some of the space where boxing used to get the occasional mention, you know, on ESPN, things like that. It wasn't mentioned like other sports. So, like, UFC took a bit of that away from boxing, I think watered it down. But, in other words, they didn't get mainstream. So I think that's part of the problem, too, is, like, whatever that number is, like, there's just – and it goes to, like, what Espinosa was saying about the advertisers and stuff. Like, there's just a certain amount of people – and advertisers that are willing to be involved in combat sports, now you'd call it, and that used to be just boxing only, let's say, whatever year you want to take it, pre-2000 or whatever. And so, like, it's a finite pool, you know what I mean? Like, it's not getting bigger. It's not – it doesn't expand, and it didn't expand for UFC. That was a myth. Like, that was just kind of took
and it was going to keep getting younger and younger and younger, and then you're like, well, actually, the fans just got older with it.
Right. So pool just got divided up, and I think that's what hurt boxing. Like, it wasn't that UFC got big. Like, that's what they would try to, you know, sell it as, and some people who are MMA fans. I think that's a myth. I don't think that's true, but it just kind of, like, divided up boxing's pie, and that's hurt. So, like, and ultimately, it also caps UFC. Like, I mean, I don't think UFC's expanded to any other group. So, you know, that's...
Yeah, because that's they went and did what they said they weren't going to do, follow boxings, and they went out and did, like, 10, 12 pay-per-views a year, you know? And I remember my you know, friends, after a while, were like, damn, dude, like, for a second there, it was like every 3 weeks. It's like, holy shit, didn't you say you weren't going to do what boxing did? But they were more stacked cards on average. And, yeah, you're right. You could just get more interest. Like, maybe you didn't want to pay for a pay-per-view, but then a couple of your buddies want to do it, or someone's already rented it, and, hey, I'll go over there. And you know, it was a entertainment night, you know. You got your entertainment value. You thought at the time.
Right. And then the other thing I just want to finally close on is, I think one option we didn't discuss that's worth discussing, I don't like it, but I think it's very likely. I mean, let's say this Amazon rumor turns out to be not true for, like, PBC. I personally think DAZN's going to go down in the U.S., and I think, as we've talked, I don't think that Top Rank deal is going to get renewed. So I think there's a scenario out there that's likely. I don't know how well it does, but it could very well be upon us even next year or the year after that, where maybe then they're just, you know, on an app just for view, and they are actually become loaded car. I'm not saying it's good, but, you know, the cards
right,
are
but
loaded.
The fight app. Yeah, the fight app,
yeah,
or
it's
whatever,
like,
yeah. Yep.
It's like the PBC fight app or the Top Rank fight app. It's $85 when you get the pay-per-view and the card, but then the only thing that changes is the card's completely loaded because they are forced to then because they can only – even they can only run so many. So they got to get these fighters' dates and what exposure they can. I think that's
right.
A scenario that's very real that could be upon us because in these last days of Showtime, that's kind of what they became in these very last few months.
Yeah.
So I think kind of the writing's on the wall there.
It's not out of the realm.
It's definitely not out of the realm.
Yeah,
right.
I agree with that.
Because even Stephen Espinosa said there was a debate. Some people, you know, obviously in the inner circles, thought you could do
right.
that. And really, that's all you needed to do anymore. And he said he was of the opinion that that wasn't worth it, that you had to have a buildup. But that's not necessarily science. Like, in other words, that's Espinosa's opinion, but we don't know.
Right.
I'm just saying theoretically, I'm not saying I want this, but I'm kind of saying, like, who knows? Maybe eight cards that not just hype stacked, like, are legitimately stacked.
And they're
85 apiece. Maybe they sell
them. And they know the hardcores will be happy. Be like, I'll pay for this, no problem, you know?
Right, it's all hardcores, and maybe they sell enough of eight of those a year from hardcores that's what it becomes. I mean, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility either. I mean, the Amazon deal or something would seem to be ideal, but I don't think this all pay-per-view, like, outlaw sport type of thing, which has been kicked around by some knowledgeable people. It's unfortunate, but this could be the beginning of that too. Like, the outlaw sport thing where you're just all pay-per-view and it's kind of like an outlaw sport for hardcores, that day might be upon us now. So we'll see, but it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, and that's what we do here at Rope-A-Dope Radio. We'll put it up on the wall and see what sticks. You know, we're not going to sit there and go into one way because, like you were saying, like, we know streaming's the future, but what we don't know exactly when it'll 100% take over in sports. And like you said, the NFL, college football, NBA, they're heavy, heavy into, you know, free TV and cable still technically. So it's not like tomorrow. But, yeah, who knows? You know, we'll see as that time goes by. I do have some stuff I'll go over a little bit later in the show. But I appreciate you, John, for taking time out for a longer segment and, you know, giving your thoughts.
All right, Chris. Great talking with you as always. Have a good rest of the night.
Yeah, you too. Take it easy.
Take care.
All righty. And for those wondering, I see Carcino will pop in there just a second, my friend. And here's an example. If you look at ABC, this is sports TV ratings. ABC, CBS, Fox, and NBC reaches down to 88 million homes. That's out of Nielsen's 123.8 TV homes, which include broadband only. The example, there are 36 million TV homes that don't have any traditional TV. The 88 homes include YouTube TV, et cetera, people using antennas. And it's funny because my generation, a little younger and a little older, I have to tell people sometimes, like, hey, dude, you can watch that for free if you just get an antenna. Or there'll be like a local app that you can just download on your Roku or whatever the hell you have, and you still can watch free TV, dude. Like, if a game's on CBS, dude, and you don't have, like, you can still watch it, dude. There's ways to watch it, dude, whether it's an antenna or whatever. Like, if you don't have cable, you can still get that. And it's funny because sometimes they don't get it. They're like, oh, I didn't know that. It's like, yeah, dude, you don't have to have cable to watch ABC or like a traditional TV and whatnot. And we're talking about, you know, the UFC does have a debt due in 2026, $2.7 billion. Disney with ESPN the UFC deal hasn't been all that great for them per se. It has been for the UFC, obviously, in many ways. But, yeah, will that in 2000, we went over that, August 2025, so, you know, under 2 years, that's when the top-ranked deal would be up. So by the end of next year, not this year, but the end of next year, if they haven't extended, then you wonder what would be going on with that. And if they did extend, what would the deal be? Because, I would like that to stay, especially now over the last, I don't know, year and change, that every ESPN, you know, on basic cable is also on the app, whereas, you know, originally that wasn't the case. So I really thought that was dope. So you don't have to have basic cable to be able to watch the ESPN boxing. So I really like that a lot. But we'll see. Like I said, I'm not one of those, I want to see people die and dead and talk about, oh, Top Rank's dead. No, it's not like that. I'm a realist, you know. I don't think they'd get the same deal they had, but you can look at Fox moved on from PBC. They also moved on from the WWE, you know. COVID messed up a lot of budgets for sports and entertainment, and then the streaming wars and whatnot. But I'm not going to act like I know exactly what's next. I'm not going to celebrate Showtime's death just like I didn't celebrate HBO, but I'm also not going to sugarcoat some stuff about Showtime and HBO as well. Like I said, if you look back at it, you know, Carcino, I, and many others are old enough, still young at heart, but old enough to know that technically speaking, the first shrinkage of the business was it going on premium cable. And we now know the last 5-8 years, premium cable has just shrunk. Even when at a time when HBO was a giant, right? Especially compared to Showtime. But they ran stuff, you know? And so, you know, that shit, if there's going to be less cable homes, well, there's going to be less people with it on their cable, HBO on their cable, Showtime on their cable. I still am old enough where I have a Showtime on the cable. You know, I'm not going to have any more. If I like something on Showtime, I'll do what I do some of the other apps. Well, I'll just, okay, I'll let that, you know, series go and then boom, pick it up, you know, and be like, all right, I'll get it for a month and catch up with something I like or something like that, like I do with other apps. Like, I don't have Peacock. I don't have a variety. I don't have Hulu, but I have some other ones. I have Amazon. I have Netflix. I have some. So anyway, my thoughts are that they know where they're going to go, whether it's being finalized or it is done. That's what I'm getting out of it. But I'm not going to sit here and, like, I have a source to Al Heyman, you know? Like, oh, yeah, I know all the details, you know, just like I don't know the details directly from a variety of folks. But you do have some folks, as far as quote-unquote sources, that you trust. And you look and you go, okay, well, is that person, what's the track record of that person and this and that? And so we'll see where it goes. Some people would just love to see, like I said, this whole Showtime dying for the last couple of years, that has most to do with Al Heyman there, because I never heard that before. Oh, Showtime Boxing's going to die now. They were always the little brother to HBO. Plenty of fighters, Andre Ward, plenty of fighters kind of got going on Showtime and then would move up, you know. I'm not saying it was minor league to major league all the time, because they had a lot of quality fights if you look back at it. So I'm not trying to say that Showtime didn't produce good-ass fights, because they did. But, you know, hey, at least Showtime went out with a bang. Like I said, the writing's been on the wall now, and it happened. The writing was on the wall budget-wise, especially with HBO. You can see the last couple years of that. I don't get too nostalgic when it comes to this stuff beyond, because I'm more about that fight, not, oh, that fight was on this. It was on this. You know, did I like, you know, HBO, the Legendary Nights? Yeah, I do. I'll watch some from time to time or whatever, but I wish there was, you know, I wish they'd do more of those or whatever. Yeah, that'd be cool. I do like the ESPN Classic stuff where when someone would go to the Hall of Fame, they'd have like a 2-hour, 3-hour interview with them, and they go through their whole career and show highlights, and that was one of the best shows. I remember Oscar did it, one of my favorite ones, because, you know, it's my favorite fighter, Sugar Ray Leonard. So yeah, by the way, I do think Catterall will beat Linares. I got a message. I thought I said that, but I guess I didn't. But yeah, I don't know what Linares has left, man. You know, and I did forget Felix Alvarado. You know, I did think that he got wronged. I did. You know, I definitely did. I had him winning the fight. And the way it went down was just so weird. You know, initially, you know, declared the winner. And then, like, you know, the announcer, oh, actually, no. You know, it's all over the place. That was weird. I'm glad someone reminded me of that, because that was a strange one. That was definitely a strange one. And, yeah, I think Rocha will win. Hopefully that's one of those two fights turn out to be competitive and whatnot. But, yeah, as I mentioned, the Bawazi Aziz fight, Aziz hurt his back in his last sparring session. And I was looking forward to that fight. Anyway, let's go ahead and bring in Carcino into the fold. Carcino, man, what is going on with you, sir? How are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm all right. I'm out here on a date, so that's why I'm like, it's like, oh, yeah, let me call in right quick. And I was like, uh-oh. Yeah, we're
well, I don't
want to
take too much of your time. Yeah, I don't want to take too much of your time now that you say that. But you can talk about Tim Tszyu. You can talk about the Showtime stuff. You can talk about what you're hearing next for Al Haymon. Talk about whatever you want, sir.
Well, what I'm hearing for Al is that in actuality that they're going to, you know, it's looking more likely not really Amazon Prime. I mean, it's everyone's assuming that's a locked deal. That's not. The Zone is actually still active, and they've been looking at, you know, Zeus as a as another person, but Zeus just doesn't have the revenue to match the kind of budget that Al Haymon is looking for. So they're trying to get and solicit Amazon Prime to their price level by putting it out in the press, but they are definitely looking at other options. Nothing's written in stone yet.
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm gonna talk to Sam Watson tomorrow and see what he's hearing as well.
There we go.
See what's going
now,
on. But, yeah, it's put a lot of fights in, like, you know, Spence, Crawford, too. You know, that's in, you know, negotiation hell right now. So, yeah, you never know what.
Yeah, I know for a fact there's multiple, like, undercard or main event type fights that are signed and waiting on that as well.
Yeah, definitely. And then you gotta think about the actual purpose of the matchups, and you know, in particular, you know, you got and Demetrius Andre, and that fight's coming up soon. And
yep.
You know, is that Showtime's last fight? Is they getting that fight? I don't even know.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely doing it. They're definitely doing it because they do have until
the end
of
this year. Yeah, I know they're doing
the
fight. I just don't know if Showtime is going to be distributing that fight or what's going to happen. But getting to the Tim Tszyu fight, I mean, as far as Tim Tszyu and Charlo, I mean, if I'm Charlo, you might as well fight Tim Tszyu. Nothing else really makes sense.
Agree.
Because if you're thinking,
totally
like,
agree.
I'm just going to fight Terrence Crawford because I'm just going for the money, it don't make no sense because you're coming off of a loss. You know, he's got to fight Errol Spence again, and nobody wants to see him fight a guy that just lost. You know, I mean, he just lost to Canelo in a poor fashion. For you, and now it looks so you embarrassed yourself, and now you're at this point.
Yeah, he's got to get back on the horse,
poor look.
Get people going again, because that fight would be something that are like, all right, let's see this one, you know, see what kind of Charlo shows up.
Yeah, and they got a lot of backing into Tim Tszyu, and I think he can beat Tim Tszyu. Actually, I think he could. Tim Tszyu is he hasn't really fought a guy to me with the kind of, you know, athleticism that Charlo has. And Charlo can hit at 154, so I don't know. I think it's a kind of even fight. You know, I really don't see. A lot of people are really big on Tim Tszyu. I'm like, he's okay. You know, I like him, but I just haven't really seen enough of him to really say he's that much better than Charlo.
Sure. I think that's fair.
But a lot of people are drunk the Kool-Aid all the way to the bottom. But going into that fight,
they're looking for
more. Probably, yeah.
And they got it on their lips. They got that little red mark on the top of their lip.
Oh, yeah. They've drunk that Kool-Aid down to the last sugar that's in the tank.
Putting their finger in the cup, trying to get a little more sugar on it.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'm not that convinced on him. But, yeah, the boxing world's been quite silent. Like, Canelo is like he would fight Errol Spence at 168, but fighting Terrence Crawford at that weight, I don't know about that. Canelo doesn't want – he's not stupid. He's not gonna want to fight Errol Spence. I mean, Terrence Crawford. And I don't blame him. I wouldn't want that either. That's a difficult matchup, and he knew from the matchup when the fight was made, Errol was in trouble. Errol's tailor-made for Canelo. Tailor-made for him.
And that was just going to be a money fight anyway, you know?
Oh, definitely. I mean, he's out his weight class. The only thing about Terrence is will the weight slow him down?
Yeah, that's my biggest thing. He's got the skills to do it, but, man, that's going to be tough to jump up that many weight classes in one fight. I almost want to see him at 54 because of that, you know what I mean? Just to go up a notch one and then to go up a notch, you know? Fight Spence or Tszyu or whatever just to do it, to get your body acclimated. That it's such a jump, dude. That's the, you know, we know he's got the skill, but, man, it's tough to do.
Oh, yeah.
Canelo's
up to
not
that
no
weight.
Ruiz. Canelo's not the Roy Jones Ruiz heavyweight, you know? That's a different ball game with Canelo.
Yeah. And then Tyson Fury has been holding the belts hostage for a while. So now I'm finally glad to see they're going to make the fight that the people wanted to see. Because he's just been holding the belts hostage. And. You know, and they're trying to put him up there.
Yeah, that's been a long time coming. That undisputed fight, man, at heavyweight, has been a long time coming, man. And we've been so close.
Yeah,
so many
we just never thought it would be with. We just never thought it would be with Tyson Fury and Usyk.
Yeah.
Yeah, we thought it'd be Wilder versus Joshua, but everybody kept playing the game when they could have made the fight. And I remember when the fight could have been named, and everybody was saying, okay, it's time to make the fight. And they kept saying, okay, we'll do two more wins. I'm like, you guys are playing a risk game that you shouldn't play, because Joshua is these
especially
guys
with
are not.
Those types of fights. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm like, Wilder is, you know, it's not a guy you can keep playing this game with. You know, you got to put him in the right type of fight, but it's dangerous. Because they could mess around and lose. Because I'm like, Wilder loses the majority of his rounds. He just has that eraser.
Right.
That gets him the knockout. But I'm like, that's a dangerous game. Just saying, oh, we're going to, after two more fights and we build it up, it'll be ready to go. I'm just like, these are not the kind of fighters you could do that with. Joshua's streaky at best. So how many times he's going to keep going to the well before he just gives it up and say, oh, I got an automatic rematch. I'll get it back in the rematch. And just quit and tap out of the fight. You know, everyone's seen that plenty of times from him. So I think that overall, Tyson Fury fighting and unifying the titles. He'll retire again after that so somebody has some more money for him. And he'll come out for another fight. But other than
I mean, you're not lying. You're not lying.
Yeah, and Terrence Crawford, what I see from him is, you know, him and Errol, they can fight in January, February. It's not going to make a difference. Errol's going to lose. He can't beat Terrence.
Yeah, I agree.
No matter what he does. He's just trying not to get embarrassed again like last time. Now, the big fight here that they got coming up is Regis Progreed fight with...
Haney. Yeah.
Yeah, with Haney. Now, that fight can expose some indications, you know. The thing about that fight is I like both fighters. It's just that Regis don't throw a lot of jabs, and he's easy. If you jab Regis and can control him with the jab, you'll be able to deal with his power, and you'll zap that away early. But if Regis lands something heavy, like he can hurt you. Like he's got middleweight power. Yeah, so, but they know he's not somebody who really moves his head, takes a couple of punches, but it depends on how disciplined he is. Some fights he's, you know, barely making weight. And, you know, depends on his focus. I think he'll get up for this one. But it's hard for some of these fighters, man, making that weight, especially when you've been sitting around. But
yeah,
that's a fight I'm intrigued about. Yeah. Like, I'm still on the fence with this Andrade and Benavidez fight.
Me too.
There's an argument
for both guys, man. Yep, there's definitely an argument for both guys to get their hands raised.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I've seen both of them in action, and I'm seeing skill set. I see what Andre could bring to the table that would disrupt David, because David's easy to be hit, but he wears you out with his attrition and activity. So if you're able to hit him with something to get his attention, it normally would change the fight around, because I've seen him lose to a lesser fighter, really. Like, he was in a dog fight with this lesser fighter.
Yeah.
Because he was out of shape.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. So.
Yeah, it's kind of that first half, second half feel to it, you know?
Yeah. All the way.
First half Andre, second half Benavidez.
You know it.
All right, buddy, anything else? Like I said, I don't want to take up too much of your time.
No, that's it.
All right, man. Well, I'll be doing a show next Tuesday. I'll be posted, buddy. Have a good night.
All right, buddy. Take care. Thank you all for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for stopping in, man. Have a good night. Good luck. All right. There are, you know, here actually, we'll read some of this from the Sports Business Journal. Oops. If anybody's on right now that want to press one, go ahead. Go ahead, and if you want to press one and join in and, you know, do your thing. Espinoza reporting being the company's just, hold on. We'll be shutting down. The company's decision is not a reflect. Oh, wait, that's, hold on. Paramount Global, this is a statement for them. As we evolve our strategy to more efficiently allocate resources and align our content offering across the business, we've made a difficult decision to not move forward with boxing and other content produced by Showtime Sports Team. Showtime will continue to air and support the remaining, you know, slate and honor the obligations, goes over the award-winning stuff, and, you know, it's a rapidly evolving media marketplace. The company, you know, had to make different, difficult decisions, reshaping, all that type of stuff. And yeah, someone sent me this too. Traditional media and this is Ray Diggs. He didn't send me it, but this is his tweet. Traditional media and entertainment companies have reported losses of more than $20 billion combined since early 2020 on the direct-to-customer streaming business. Netflix, which brings in profit, is an exception, but the rest of the industry is wondering. I mean, and that's where you look at Amazon, and if you look at, you know, you could tell they mean business just off of that Thursday night deal. A bill a year for 11 years. That tells you they're interested. Now, I'm not saying they're interested in boxing, but I'm saying as far as, you know, the future in sports, live sports. Because that's the thing. That's still, if you do it right and you have the attention, right, like NFL and whatnot, of course, that's the thing that you can still peek out. You know, if there's a game six and a game seven in basketball, those things are going to peak. You know, like I said, college football is a very underrated sport that people don't realize how big it is. If you look at the ratings, if you look at how many channels it's on from, you know, the AM to the AM. So, yeah, I mean, that is a major thing. And right now, Amazon, whereas most people are cutting back and trying to, you know, put stuff together like the Paramount Showtime app, like the Discovery and HBO. And don't get me wrong, you know, those two are much higher than, you know, than a Showtime app or whatever. Like I said, it's always been the little brother. But the fact that Amazon is making such a large investment and they see the future where they can lead the future of sports, live sports, well, then, yeah, that would be a big thing. And that Netflix, it's like an 18-hole goal with the Wynn Golf Club, the Netflix Cup, November 14th. That's their first live streaming sports event. Eddie Hearn, this is from Ringwalk Danny, shouts out to the boxing boys, Ness and company. Eddie Hearn confirms nearly 9,000 tickets sold already for Haney Pro Gray, December 9th. A Chase Center rep also confirmed to me that all the courtside suites have sold, and a handful of the suites were left in the entire arena. So that's good, man. That's really, really good news. Like I was saying earlier, this is Sky Sports News. Ben Shalom, he's confirmed that the Isaac Chamberlain and Lowell, I think it's Michael Lowell, that will be the main event instead of Bouazzi and Aziz. Now, he said he hopes to reschedule that Joshua Bouazzi and Dan Aziz fight before Christmas. So, you know. And then Pro Gray Haney undercard, Liam Morrow and Montana Love. Andy Cruz and Hector, what the hell's his name, Tanahara. I like that fight a lot. Like the Montana Love part, that's pretty good. Ebony Bridges is on that. But I really like that Cruz Hector fight. That Andy Hector, that's a good, I like that. I do like that. I know, you know, folks, you know, don't necessarily love that it's on pay-per-view, and I get it. But I do like that as an undercard fight. That's kind of interesting to me. I kind of like that. That's pretty good. Tomorrow night on Pro Box, Boca Chica and Paul Mehta are in the main event. Boca Chica, you know, he's a guy that still, I think, only has one loss. It was to Villa. Had that draw. Pretty sure it was a split draw, right? I don't think it was a majority draw against Bunch. But, you know, and then Palmetta took a recent loss. They both lost in the last fight, so it is a crossroads. Took one earlier to Jamal James. But, you know, I like that. That's kind of an interesting little main event there. And now that Showbox is going to be gone, I like what mid-level or prospect-level stuff I gotta say, I've liked, especially the Wednesday night stuff, you know, which is usually a good night for them, the Pro Box. I think they've done a good job with that. You know, I do. Now, as far as the intercard of Catero and Lenore is, the one that I'd say is equally matched for sure is that Akib, Faez, and Bellotti, that Reese dude. That's probably, well, especially in the main event, obviously. That's definitely like an equally matched fight. Like I said, you know, they like to call it domestic level in the UK. Shouts out to the UK. And that would be a domestic level. Like I said, we could say, hey, these guys have already kind of shown a ceiling. But there's a lot of guys like that. And there's a lot of domestic, what I'd call mid-level here. Those are good fights. You know, just like the Lewis Green and Sam Geely. You know, I think that's, you know, in fact, here, let me look at the odds for those fights. So there you go. Let's see. It just went away. Okay. So the one I previously mentioned, that's basically a 50-50 fight. I think plus 130. Reese is the favorite, but plus 130 is the highest. Otherwise, plus 112, plus 110, plus 115. In that Chamberlain, in that Mikhail Lawland, plus 170 is the tops there. So I mean, that's a good fight. That's close fights, dude. That's really close fights. Oh yeah, that Sam Geely, Lewis Green, the highest odd for Sam Geely as an underdog is plus 150. Otherwise, plus 130, plus 120. Those are fights that I believe will have, you know, a good breakdown. Gabriela Fundora is in a competitive fight with Muccino, too. Let me see what the odds are for that. That's even tighter than I thought. Yeah, plus 120. So it is one of those weekends that you hope that the undercards pop off. Duke Reagan, I should have mentioned him, too. Richard Torres, they got wins over the weekend as well. I did break down the May England fight. England won by split decision. I saw that fight. That was a pretty good fight. I think I saw it from the second round on or something like that. Yeah, that was a good fight. I definitely enjoyed that fight. One of the biggest fights, you know, of the weekend in my mind, the most anticipated one, it is what it is. But we'll just kind of finish it up with fight news and then, of course, the boxing Twitter segment. Oh, by the way, that Tommy Fury, I haven't even talked about it. Tommy Fury beat KSI. I saw highlights. I didn't watch the whole fight or nothing like that, just to be honest. I guess there's a correction. Card was announced. One of them was announced the draw when it was 57-56, same as the other two. So I guess they just got done announcing it. You know, to each his own with that stuff. I've always kind of said that. It is what it is. Everybody has their entertainment value, what they deem entertainment and what they're willing to pay for it or stream or whatever the fuck they do, right? I'll say this, though. It's always been about attention, right? And especially now with social media, the engagement. You know, the old saying of all, you know, all press is good press, you know. But that fucking weigh-in with the plexiglass, that shit was corny as fuck. I got to admit, that was corny as shit. But hey, they're doing their thing. The source that I saw, 1.3 mil pay-per-view, you know, I don't know. I really don't. I'll be honest. I don't know if that's legit. I really don't know. I'm just being honest. I don't know if that's a legit thing. It's basically like if you take the UK price, because that's where they sold the most, assumingly. Because sometimes that 1.3 can be a world, you know, a world pay-per-view, which is really vague. But let's just say it did a million something there, or 1.3 there. If you do the math, it's basically like a, I think like a 350,000, 400,000 pay-per-view here, you know, with our prices. So yeah, but you know, more power to you, you know, more power to you. If that's, you know, if that's what you're into. I know it was like $55 here. And in the UK, it was about $20. So if you do the math there, and it's Happy Punch. Happy Punch is the outlet that's saying 1.3. So, you know, that's not really, I don't know. You know, I really don't know. Eddie Hearn saying a couple things. I do want to clear something up because he didn't get misquoted, Eddie Hearn, but the quote needed context. Just like a lot of shit these days, right? Eddie Hearn, this is IFL TV. This isn't the one, but he said now he expects Joshua to fight, take place in late December or January, meaning the Wilder fight would go to like March or April, right? Now, you know, there was other things said. Like here, this is what he said. Now, he was asked about it, right? And he answered saying that the fight would be possibly in the summer. We're still looking to do that, but we're not going to wait around to the summer or April or whatever, March. We're going to maybe fight, right? And he said we're still talking to Shelley and that type of thing. So he, like I said, he didn't get misquoted, but the quote needs context because when he was explaining that and talking about that, someone – asked him or used Wilder's trainer, right, to say, well, they say, he said that trainer, Malik Scott, said that it's because of you. So, yeah, he went on the defensive a little bit, but it was, he was fed something that he was saying, well, hold on, you know. So I did want to clarify that because we get a lot of that lacking context nowadays. But here's the quote. We were offered a deal that we accepted, both accepted. It fell through. It's not my fault now that some of the alternatives may not be anywhere near the last number, so that makes us reconsider our option. Now, he talked about that prior saying, yeah, you know, it's not as much money, but it's still a lot of money, and we're still looking. I was talking to Shelley, and so he was saying that, and had they had just let him talk, he probably wouldn't have said this other stuff. As far as like, but he did get, you know, if you're going to say Malik Scott said you didn't do it and the fight didn't happen because of you, well, of course he's going to defend himself, you know. So he says we're also in line potentially to fight, you know, Filip Hrgović or Otto Wallin, even though one and two is Hrgović and Wallin. Now, could they pay somebody to step aside to get that? Maybe. He says, so I don't care about Wilder. He's got his own problems. The guy ain't fought for a year, and his last fight was 40 seconds. He don't really want to fight, I don't think. And that's where it was like, well, that sounds like he was just saying, oh, he don't want the fight now. Well, that's not exactly how it, you know, that's not exactly how that went. You know what I mean? So, yeah. And Adam from SN Boxing, he said a real – this is a good point. A real nice eight-rounder Saturday night, Golden Boy undercard, David Stevens 13-0, Joshon James 7-0-2. Stevens had a great win on Showbox against Hempville. He sure did. And James perhaps should have gotten the nod earlier this year against Javier Martinez. Yeah, that's – once again, I'm glad we talked about that because that's – that's going to be – these undercard fights this weekend, man, we need them to pay off. Lee Wood has now officially vacated his WBA, which now should go to Ray Ford and Kolmatov, I think it is. That's probably going to be what that goes to. He's going to take that little timeout and then go up to 130. As I mentioned, Boxer, NBC Sports, reach a deal to air on Peacock and NBC. You know, there's really no, I don't think there's like a date on it or how many events or anything like that. We know NBC Sports, you know, the Big Ten football and basketball, obviously the Olympic Games, Premier League, Sunday Night Football, Notre Dame football for now, NASCAR, golf. So, yeah, I mean, they're already getting a taste of it. Not that they haven't in the past, but it is kind of funny. Like, here we go. This is why some places don't want boxing too, because they got hurt. Now the main event's not happening. Robeson Ramirez and Rafael Espinoza for the WBO title fight to headline December 9th, the ESPN show. Location to be announced. And, you know, as a headliner, yeah, that's not great, especially when you get it's the post-Heisman, right? But as J-Roe and Boxer Ed Gray, you know, talked about on Twitter, that we, you know, they're having this fight. They're trying to get more than likely Inoue is going to fight because, you know, at 126 after his next fight. And he would get that WBO number one spot if he done. So that's really what that's about. And that kind of lines up. But yeah, it does suck. I understand some folks, especially the person that just sent me saying, you know, this is what they're going to do with their Heisman night. Yeah, I hear you. It's not a great main event for that night. But if they can make that fight next, you know, it is good exposure. Yocasta Valle and Annabelle Ortiz, November 4th, Golden Boy fight in Costa Rica. That is signed, sealed, and delivered. I think we talked about this before. Someone sent me this. Matias and Ergashev is going to be on the undercard for Benavidez and Andre. That's just a bang-em type fight. This is what I was talking about before, Inoue and Topala's, you know, targeting December 26th for the Undisputed at 122 in Tokyo. And this is actually interesting. I heard Boxino returns in 2024 with a bang. Remember that Boxino tournament? That was like one of the last things that was on Friday Night Fights. This one's funny, dude. Fight TV Triller. Triller's back. Oh, my God. November 11th, the legendary Razor Ruddock will return to the ring against Hall of Famer James Toney live on Fight from Kingston, Jamaica. And there's people through Paola that just bent over backwards for that platform. And like I said, the IBF has now officially updated their heavyweight rankings. You have Hergovic 1, Otto Wallen 2. So you'd assume that that would be what would be called next. This is Rolled Boxing. Quality follow, obviously, you know, boxing scene and all that. This November will mark 6 years since Biturbiev and Bivol became co-titleists at lightweight. Their record against each other is 0-0. Yes, 6 years since they've been champ at the division. And all you could hear about is Spence and Crawford. Now, did we want Spence and Crawford? Yes, we did. But did we? But can you complain about other stuff? Yeah. Yeah, you can. Yeah, because Wallen's coming out. I got that money off of plus 220 with that Wallen. That was easy money, man. That was easy money. But Eddie Hearn also said about the Wilder, you know, Joshua, that fight, in my opinion, will 100% happen in the first half of the year, maybe first quarter, blah, 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 blah. Let's hope. Like I said, I've always said that I'll admit if I'm wrong on that one. I did think it's going to happen. If it doesn't happen, then I'll admit it's wrong. When I saw those quotes, I thought, yeah, this shit ain't happening, you know, once he starts firing shots at Wilder. But then I did my due diligence and added context to it and realized, oh, there's context. Eddie was just responding to what somebody said about Malik. Okay, so this is Raging Bay. PBC folks would make fun of boxing on apps. PBC folks is a very open, you know, terminology there. It's very vague or wide-spanning, whichever you want to say. So, you know, folks would make fun of boxing on apps, on an app, really not on apps. Well, yeah, I suppose Black Prime, BLK Prime. That's why it's important to be objective. You never know where you'll end up or who you'll end up working with one day. I personally don't see anything wrong with it, but I know it's part of boxing decline. But the thing is, you know, beyond like the fanboy stuff and the dead zone stuff, if in fact they got to Hulu or Paramount or Netflix or whatever, right, there's a difference between something that for boxing never hit a million subscribers compared to something that has 40 or 60 or 100 million. That's, and by the way, when you talk about it's important to be objective, you know, I respect her a lot because she actually had skin in the game, but she hasn't been objective when it came to the PBC. I mean, that's obvious. Here's some boxing Twitter stuff. One of the biggest, I'm so glad Showtime's out of the business guy is so glad that they're out of the business. In fact, Inouye beat Fulton, Crawford beat Spence, and Showtime Boxing is dead. This is the best year in boxing in the last 5 to 10 years. See, this is what I'm talking about. It's like you're praying for a downfall. And remember, it's actually PBC is dead, and it turned into Showtime being dead because you shouldn't have gotten involved with PBC Showtime. You're going out of business. Okay, but it started out PBC dying. That's what it was. So if they, in fact, don't have a deal, then cool, then you say it's dead. But until we don't know, we know that for a fact, funny, because when you see this shit, and these are the people that are like, don't be a fanboy. What the fuck are you, that's a fanboy in a all day long. I mean, like these are the things that he's talking about before the, you know, Canelo signed with the PBC. Exactly what I told his son, that his nickel and dime daddy's outfit don't have $50 million to guarantee. That's what they said about Benavidez, the Benavidez fight. That's what he said. I mean, come on, dude. Canelo getting that Saudi money, he don't need no that food stamp offer from Samson and the PBC, the nickel and dime that don't have the guarantee. I mean, this fucking, he's racist for one. And two, this isn't a boxing fan, but yet these are the motherfuckers that say don't be a fanboy. But yet, you're acting like a fanboy. This is John Rhodes from, is it Facebook or something? This is a good one. Benavidez should not force himself to get Canelo fight. That clown is a coward, avoiding the best opposition. Okay. Benavidez versus Shakur Stevenson is a hell of a fight and should take place sooner rather than later. I believe Shakur would punish him every round, possibly stops Benavidez in the ninth round. So Shakur, who doesn't stop a lot of people, is going to stop David Benavidez. I mean, is he for sure going to stop Jose Benavidez? If we're going, you know, if we're going down this line, that's just wild. That's a good one. Gervonta Davis said, the judge is stopping me from training the proper way. She want me in Maryland with my life in danger every fucking day. That's pretty fucked up. That's pretty fucked up if that's true. I'm not saying it's not. But, I think we may have to end on this one. Let me see. Oh, we got a couple more. But this one's a doozy, like the old timers used to say. Who would Ali beat in this era? He would get KO'd by any top 20. He competed in a low-level, unprofessional era. Oh, my God. Yeah, because the 70s heavyweight era, man. Who in the 60s, I should say. Boy, yeah, there's no names involved there at all. It's just, you know. This is Jeanabek, Kwaza style. This is someone's running his account, I assume. You know that I'm ready. If Canelo is ready, then I'm ready to fight in February. I need 4 belts. I can knock him out easily. If you understand boxing, then you know it all. Come on, man. Stop. This is Android Uppercut. So when the UFC joins the WWE on USA Network, network in a year or two, the ESPN deal has been an absolute bloodbath for Disney. Is the media going to keep the same energy? Are fans going to say what's wrong with MMA? Nah, especially boxing fans, no way. This is someone that says if it goes to the zone, if boxing goes to the zone, or I mean, if PBC goes to the zone, all fights will be pay-per-views. 50 for former Showtime HBO cards, 75 for star versus contender, 100 for two-star fighters. The zone with subscriptions raises will probably be PBC future independent airings. Okay. This surprised me here. Emmanuel Rodriguez, two-time IBF bantamweight titleist, announced his retirement at 31. Here's another one, just straight fanboy. If Jermell were confident in his ability, he had the time to take care of his mandatory before making the Canelo fight. He did enough to collect all those belts and still hasn't fought at 54 again 18 months later. At least he got the money. It's like, dog, he was hurt. You stupid, silly. Come on, dude. Stop. Stop. Just stop it. Just stop it, dude. You're really showing your ass now. Anyway, I think I'm going to get out of here. Like I said, let's hope some of the, you know, one or two of these main events pop off and be really competitive. And I have a feeling that those 3 to 4 undercard fights, let's hope some of those pop off too, which I think they will, or at least be competitive fights. You know, that's what we're after as boxing fans. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. Be back next week. Peace.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel you have the upper hand.